we go.
Who the fuck is that guy?
Luke was a killer. First time that I saw him, wonder how many girls he had left and left haunted. But if he's a ghost, then I can be a phantom, holding him for ransom. Some boys are trying too hard.
I'm doing great.
Hope this records fine.
I would hope so as well.
Yeah, I haven't changed anything, so. Everybody, if you're only hearing one of us, well, that's because the other one's a ghost.
Yeah. Or maybe don't even air it if there's only one of us this time.
You would
be some sort of quality control here, right?
You would think.
Yeah.
You would think that there'd be some source of civil pride or whatever, but no, not at all.
No. Yeah, the pride is in the streak. Just there has to be something put out. Doesn't matter what, if there's one person or if the quality, just as long as it goes out, that's what counts.
That's really true. Although I will say that if I find out this isn't recording properly, I'll just record something myself. I'm coming up with a whatever. This is MMA and stuff. I thought I had like a cool opening. I was gonna say, fucking forgot what it was gonna be. Got nothing.
Do you want to think about it for a minute?
No, not really. I don't really care.
All right, welcome to MMA Stuff on HalfGuarded.com. I am Matt, that is Mike. This week we're going to be talking about all the news in MMA and stuff. We're going to cover all the stuff news this week. This past weekend we had a UFC fight night. I'm not sure if anyone remembers it, but it was on Saturday in Belém, Brazil. Attendance was 10,144 people. Kind of a screwed up card for a few different reasons. Let's start with we'll start at the weigh-ins. Let's start there.
Okay, that's usually where things start.
Yeah, well, they started to go downhill there pretty quickly. First, we had Michel Prezeris. He normally fights at 155 pounds. I think he's missed weight a couple times in his career. Short guy who you would think would. Most people his height are fighting at 135, probably. He weighed in at 161 pounds, which is, 5 pounds over the limit, even if you give him an extra pound.
He kind of looks like in his prime Dynamite Kid. He's got this blown-up midget steroid look.
Yeah, a little bit. So they decided that the guy he was going to fight, Desmond Green, agreed to the fight. He got 20% of Prezeris' purse, and if Prezeris won, he was going to get another 20% of Prezeris' purse. Mm-hmm. But there was an agreement that Prezeris was supposed to weigh a maximum of 173 pounds on the night of the fight.
I mean, he is fighting it lightweight after all. That seems a little reasonable, but...
So he's supposed to be 155. He weighs in at 161. Night of the fight, if he makes 173 pounds, the fight would go ahead. But apparently he weighed 180 pounds
of the fight. What a hero.
And despite that, Green still accepted the fight. And Prezeris ended up giving him 40% of his purse because Prezeris ended up winning the fight by unanimous decision. That was basically third from the top on the main card. Prezeris won 30-27, 29-28, 30-27. And, like, when you saw these two guys in the cage, like, Desmond Green was the taller guy with more reach, but he looked so much smaller. Like, I was thinking – I didn't know about the 180 pounds thing, but I was thinking he had a good 15, maybe 20 pounds on Green, and that might not be too far off.
I mean, I know these guys cut a lot of weight, but usually when people cut weight – and you see these extreme numbers, it's really not. A lot of this is like, oh, I cut 30 pounds. It's like, yeah, because you measure yourself like two, three days later when your body's going to absorb a lot of food anyways. Rarely do guys go into the cage that much heavier. I mean, my word, that's 25 pounds of water, essentially. It would have been if he had made it. That's damn near impossible. Most guys are, they're dying after 15 pounds of water. What the fuck? And he's all jacked up. That's the problem. That's what's great about this. This fucking roid monkey is still cutting weight. Just do one last round of tests that cycle or whatever, and you'll make weight fine. Fuck. I bet you could challenge Mighty Mouse if he got off the horse juice.
Prezeris is also 5'6". He's 5'6", went into the cage at 180 pounds.
And that's, you know, and he shredded and ripped at that weight.
And coming in from a training camp, too. Like, what's his walk-around weight? 2-something? It's got to be 200 pounds when he's out of camp.
Oh, at least. And at 5'6"? I mean, if he was a real big, tall guy, like, I could see Nate Diaz get up to 200 pounds, no problem. It might be a little chubby, but it wouldn't be, like, the weirdest thing in the world. But you're 5'6"? I mean, if you're a 5'6", 155-pound person normally, that's kind of like you're kind of big for your weight. Like, what the fuck?
He's like Super Porky.
Yeah, only with muscle. Which is really odd. I don't even know how that's possible.
Super Porky is awesome. Then we also had the story of Pedro Munhoz and John Dodson. They were supposed to fight actually at 135. Dodson's moved up to 135 for his last couple fights. He was a longtime flyweight. But Munhoz missed weight. He was 4 pounds over the bantamweight limit of 136. So Dodson essentially declined to take the fight. Didn't want to fight him if he was overweight or whatever. And to Dodson's credit, I mean, the guy's halfway to 145, and Dodson's really a 125-pound fighter. I'm kind of okay with him turning down the fight. Like, I never fault a guy if he bothered to take the time and put in the effort to cut the weight and the other guy doesn't. It's not really their problem. But the reason this made some news was it initially came out that Dodson wasn't going to get any of his show money at all because he turned down the fight. Then reports said later that he was going to get part of it. I'm still not totally sure how that's panned out. Last I heard, Dodson said he hadn't seen any money yet, but apparently they're going to be on the UFC 222 card coming up in March. So the fight got rebooked quick, but kind of sucks to fly all the way down to Brazil, not have your fight, not get paid anything.
Yeah, the UFC really should come up with some sort of official policy for these things now, because this is the second or third guy that's been like, hey, I showed up, I made weight, they didn't make weight, why, you're not going to pay me? At least in this case, Munhoz offered to fight, so your UFC could be like, hey, you could have fought, but no, you shouldn't have to fight somebody that much bigger than you. That's bullshit. But maybe there could be some deal like, if you make weight and your opponent doesn't, if they determine that that guy can't fight, you get your full show money. If the guy is able to fight and it's within, you know, we'll say 5 pounds of the agreed upon weight, you have the right to refuse it, but you're going to lose 20% of your show money. Kind of like, so guys aren't like totally incentivized to just be like, yeah, screw it, I'm not going to take this fight, I'm going to get paid and fight again. But at the same time, we're not forcing guys in there into these gigantic mismatches a la Prezeris there.
Yeah, it's interesting though, because after the show, if you thought about Desmond Green and John Dodson, there's like a weird respect factor there where you're like, yeah, I kind of respect Green for taking that fight. And Dodson, it's like, what a pussy, because he turned the fight down and it was only 4 pounds. It's a weird thing. Like, and I'm not saying that's me, but I'm just saying when you saw Green in there against this monster of a man who outweighed him by 15, 20 pounds, you're like, Jesus Christ, that took some balls. Even if he loses, like, it's kind of a moral victory just taking the fight at all. So it's a weird thing with the missing of the weight. But to me, the bigger issue is
that actually completely validates Dodson's decision. He just looks at people and be like, yeah, you see what they fucking did there?
Right.
Like, that's
I don't want that happening to me. And that's fair. Like, I get both sides of it. Like, the one guy, Green, got 40% of the other guy's purse and made some money and can pay his mortgage the next couple months. It's weird. It's a tough situation to be in. And I think, like you said, there should be a set rule. But bigger picture, and I was going to say I don't have real hard data on this, but to me it feels like the early morning weigh-ins has caused more people to miss weight than previously. Like, there's rarely a show where someone doesn't miss weight now. And in the past, it was like you had these guys who missed weight a lot, like Anthony Johnson or Gastelum and, you know, the John Lineker, certain guys who were known for missing weight. And now it's all the time there's guys missing weight, just random dudes who have always made weight, missing weight here or there. And I wonder if it's that early morning weigh-in or what the story is. But that hasn't really seemed to help guys make weight. If anything, they're missing weight more.
Yeah, I'd heard somebody somewhere talk about that, and it makes sense in that it really shouldn't cause more guys to miss weight. If anything, they should all make weight because they have extra time to – although I think it could be a factor of guys think they'll have more time to recover, so they're going to cut more weight.
Right.
And so they're not timing it right. And there's also just – if these weigh-ins are, say, at 10 a.m., usually, you know, if you go to sleep the night before, you wake up, and most of these guys are accustomed to having 12 hours to cut weight. And now they're essentially getting 4 hours maybe. Now, they really should just wake up early or something like that, but I can see they don't want to, like, mess up their sleep schedule the day before their fight. And so some of them, you know, maybe they're realizing that they cut too much weight the day of, and again, they have to learn to adjust. Because I think most of these guys are kind of maybe on their first or second go-around with the kind of same-day weigh-in or early weigh-ins, so they may not all be accustomed to it. I may be talking out of my ass also. Sometimes I do that.
In the main event, we had Lyoto Machida defeating Eric Anders by split decision, 48-47, 47-48, and 49-46. Dull fight. I want to say your classic Machida fight, because when you think classic Machida, you more think, like, I don't know, him kicking Randy Couture in the face. But he's had some fights like this in the past where he's not really engaging. He's circling around on the outside of the cage and throwing some punches here or there and trying to counter. But dull fight. I think a lot of people scored it for Anders, but Machida got the nod in Brazil. Whether that had a factor in it, I don't know.
I cannot recall a single thing that happened in this fight, and yet at the same time, I'm pretty sure that I could describe every second of it in accurate detail. Huh. It was Machida at his worst against a guy who was not skilled enough or tough enough or athletic enough to kind of impose anything on him. Machida's old and just circled and circled and punched and fainted a little bit and then circled and kicked and fainted a little bit and they just fucking did it over and over again. And again, I know it's a fight. You've got to win your fights. He's been off for his, I don't know, whatever it was, a 15 or 17 month suspension, some weird fucking number probably, because USADA's making it up or whatever, whoever's doing this shit. But I don't know, the fight was terrible. Machida's like 39 or something like that. I mean, I think the only saving grace is you can say, well, I'm kind of impressed with Machida's style. He's able to do it at an older age, but is he really able to do it? He fought a guy that I have no idea who he is still, and the guy wasn't good enough to do anything to him, and the less said, the better, I say after ranting.
It's funny. I'm looking for ratings for this show. I just type in UFC Bellum ratings. There's nothing.
I can't even find. That's the universe giving it a hash.
Well, usually it's like if they're really bad, they'll get reported on and be like, oh, the UFC's going under. This is a disaster. But I can't even find that. That's how little interest there was in this show. In the semi-main event, we had Valentina Shevchenko defeating Priscilla Cachoeira by submission, rear naked choke at 4:25 of the second round. This was Shevchenko's debut at flyweight. She was a contender at bantamweight and is expected to kind of be the favorite at flyweight to become, you know, probably the next champion if she gets the Nico Montana fight next. But this was a bad beating. Yamasaki was the ref of this one. He took a lot of heat for Cachoeira taking some unnecessary damage here. Just vicious ground and pound, striking on the feet. I think Cachoeira tore her ACL in the first round. This thing just went on and on. She got mounted. She had her back taken. It was just, it was ugly. It was one of the more one-sided fights you see in the UFC nowadays until CM Punk comes back.
Yeah, and I'll be there live for that one, I bet. yeah, I mean, with the acknowledgement that Cachoeira there apparently blew out her ACL, which does change my valuation of the fight a little bit, the performance of Shevchenko. I thought when this was over, I went, oh boy, I haven't seen a woman in like a long time in any weight class almost put on that thorough of a beating. Just, you know, we've seen women knock people out real quick, Nunes and Rousey, or anybody versus Rousey. We've seen Rousey submit people real quick in throws, but this is kind of like a man, the way a man would go out there and just beat somebody. And it just went, I mean, I just walked away going, oh, nobody's beating Shevchenko at this weight. I mean, this chick's just a monster. This was the, everybody's going, she's really great, and you never really kind of saw it at 135. Like, you kind of, it kind of makes sense now that a girl who looks this good at 125 and against somebody like Holly Holm, and you go, well, okay, maybe she didn't look like a world beater against Holm, just kind of squeaks by because of the size, and damn, she looked good here. And I will also give Mario Yamasaki a little bit of a pass. You don't want to say that every day, but I'm not really a... I don't know if the beating was that bad.
It was pretty bad. I mean, like, some of those shots on the elbows and stuff, like, her face was banged up. She's hobbling around on one knee. Like, I think it could have been stopped in the first, and nobody would have really said anything about it.
Probably. It probably could have, and I hate to agree with Ben Miller, of all people, but he had said something. He didn't really say this at all. It was spurred by somebody tweeted about women's sports or whatever. But I was talking to Tony about it, in fact, and it was the idea that I think that these types of ground-and-pound stoppages in women's MMA are always going to be more uncommon than in men, because women just aren't going to do as much damage. Like, right. The fact is, like, if you look at like the thickness of the human skull and therefore the ability to kind of get punched, men and women's skulls are roughly the same thickness. Men's are a little thicker, but for the most part, they're pretty close as far as just being really dense, but the power that men can generate with ground and pound is really powerful. Sure. Like, we can really hurt somebody, whereas women just physically can't generate that kind of power. The force mm-hmm. just doesn't come from their body type and muscularity and athleticism and all that shit. And when it does on occasion, like a cyborg, you go, oh, that's really, like, that's a different level. And so I did think that we saw, you know, some of the elbows kind of did some damage, but again, like, if this is a dude, it would have been a finish. Like, she would have, mm-hmm. you know, KO'd him probably from the ground and pound. But because it's a woman, honestly, she's not delivering as much punishment. It can go on a little longer. And let's face it, if your opponent's got one leg and you're punching them a whole lot, and they can just get up and they can somehow walk after the round is over, you probably didn't really do that much damage.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the way I was looking at it was more, it was just a mismatch.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I don't know if Shevchenko's that amazing, or if this was Cachoeira's debut in the UFC. She was like 8-0 on some like small Brazil shows, you know what I mean? So this was her first time. She's fighting probably the best flyweight in the world. And it was like, you know, by the end of that first round, you knew it was over. Did she need to take that next 4 minutes of a beating? I don't know. I would have been okay with an earlier stoppage, I guess.
So would I, but I think that if you're the referee, that's always one of those really weird things that happens. And it really shouldn't. Like, that type of decision should never be in the referee's hands, because realistically, the matches shouldn't be made that one-sided. And, yeah, it's very possible there was a mismatch. And there's some idea, oh, the referee's got to protect the fighters. But just because you're not good doesn't mean – like, to me, the referee should stop it when you're taking damage that can harm you. And, I mean, we kind of play the game a little bit. Like, when guys get, like, put in a crucifix position, they get punched a lot. None of those shots, for the most part, usually are going to damage somebody. But they're kind of unable to defend themselves. But – you know, she right. did kind of defend herself, and just because she's not good at it, well, I mean, shit, we probably should have never had GSP fight Matt Serra that first or second time, especially, you know. It was pretty clear after a little bit of time was going on, but, you know, if we'd done that, we wouldn't have seen Matt Serra win that one time. So, I guess in sum, I get that, but it's always weird, because you're the referee. You don't want to be making that kind of determination. Like, I think especially in between rounds, if I'm a referee, I call the doctor in. And if the doctor says she can go, then I'm going to defer to the doctor on that one. And then I'll wait till she gets punched a little bit more in the cage, and then I'll be like, ah, now I can justify it. Or in this case, I'll let it go another 4.5 minutes, and then be like, ah, okay, We took the over on halfway in this fight. So what's up, Korean dudes? We're good.
But you got to wonder too if Shevchenko hadn't gotten that choke in at 425, another 30 seconds, it would have been the third round, and she would have trotted out there again and taken another. I don't know.
Hey, it's cage fighting at the end of the day. Sometimes people just get the shit beat out of them, and we're all going to cheer for it, like the bloodlusting monsters that we are.
A fight that no one was cheering for was Timothy Johnson defeating Marcelo Gome by unanimous decision, 30-27, 29-28, 29-28.
Yeah, this is like the Machida fight, only worse.
How about Douglas Silva de Andrade defeating Marlon Vera by unanimous decision, 30-27 on all three cards?
I don't know what happened to Marlon Vera, other than I remember his name from stuff, and I kind of think, oh, he was okay, and now he's losing on the no-name fight on a UFC Bellum show.
And in the opener, we had Thiago Santos defeating Anthony Smith by TKO. It was a body kick, and then I think punches on the ground.
I remember this.
This was 103 in the second round. Fun fact, Santos has tied Anderson Silva's record for KOs in the UFC middleweight division.
I think this is a fight I think it was either this fight or maybe it was another fight from previous weekend, actually, now that I think about it. I just remember somebody got hit in the body, and the way they went down was like this like they were horrified at how much pain they were in. And these are grown, cage-fighting men, and they're out there, and you can hit them as much as you want in the face, and they're tough, and they'll bleed, and like they'll break their hands and keep punching with the hand and all this. But you just punch them in the belly in the right spot, and they just crumble. They crumble to the ground in the fetal position like children. And it's just amazing how that works. The toughest of us all, you get punched in the solar plexus in just the right spot. I guess that goddamn heart punch is legit.
There's a reason we have a rib cage. It's to protect that stuff, right? This is the fourth knockout win in a row for Santos. He was ranked 15th in the middleweight division, a guy you don't hear much about, but he's looked good. Granted, it's against lower level guys, but I mean, in the UFC alone, he's got a knockout win against Hani Marks, Andy Enns, Steve Bosse, Nate Marquardt, Jack Marshman, Gerald Murskart, Jack Hermanson, and now Anthony Smith. Like I said, it's not elite guys, and like he's got a loss to Uriah Hall and Gegard Mousasi, so it's like he's lost to the upper level guys, but that's a good run. 8 KOs in the UFC. Not many guys can say that.
Yeah, it sounds like he's beating the guys that he should beat, and usually that's all you can ask of these losers no one cares about. Would you say he was ranked number 15 at middleweight?
Yes, now it'll probably be 14.
Okay, so that would put him at, what, second in line for the third interim title coming up pretty soon?
Probably. Anybody on the prelims catch your eye?
No.
All right, I don't know. Yuri Alcantara defeated Joe Soto by TKO.
I think some of the prelims are like on Fox Sports 2 or some shit.
Yes, you don't get that.
Yeah, I didn't see that shit.
Yeah. It's weird. I get Fox Sports 1 and Fox Sports 2, but not Fox. Fight of the night went to Thiago Santos versus Anthony Smith, and performances were Valentina Shevchenko and Yuri Alcantara. And that is your UFC Bellum review, everybody. In other news, on the topic of Brazil, Chris Cyborg has her next fight, but we should preface that with UFC 222 has had some issues. Max Holloway pulled out of the show with an injury. Forget what it was. Do you know what Max Holloway's injury actually was?
I actually thought for a second you were setting me up for something. I'm like, wait, am I supposed to know? I don't know. I have no idea. It doesn't sound like it was like a serious thing.
No,
I feel like it was knee. I'm going to go with knee.
Suffered a leg injury.
Son of a bitch, I'm a genius.
And the knee is part of the leg, so that's possible.
Yeah, it's connected to the hip bone.
The knee is not.
Via the thigh bone, it is.
Seems like a lot of people get hip replacements nowadays, like older people.
Probably. I'm guessing that it's one of the – I bet that's one of those things where people are like, ah, look at this is proof that we're doing something different. And really what it is that throughout all of time, people needed hip replacements, but they just spent their last decade in incredible pain, and now we just give them new hips.
Probably.
It's like, how, like, everybody's like, oh, there's more cancer now than ever. That, or people are living long enough to die of cancer, and we actually diagnose it rather than just say, I died of consumption. What's that? I was kind of sick. Yeah,
I mean, same thing with the hips. Everybody lives longer than they used to. So,
or the gays. Like, my grandma said when she was growing up, there weren't gay people around. It's like, yeah, there were. They just weren't out like they are now. They've always been amongst you.
Probably. So Holloway was out. So this card is scheduled at early March, like the first week of March. I want to say March 3rd. So it's like they've got like 4 weeks to replace Max Holloway. He was supposed to fight Frankie Edgar for the featherweight title, and Holloway's out. And this was that card that the co-main, and I say co meaning semi, and maybe not even semi, was Stefan Struve versus Andre Arlovsky. So you obviously can't do a pay-per-view with those two guys on top. So UFC's been scrambling to come up with a main event. There was rumors that this show might go on Fox Sports 1 and be a fight night, but they did manage to get Chris Cyborg to agree to fight on less than 4 weeks' notice, close to 3 weeks' notice, against Yana Kunitskaya, who is the current Invicta bantamweight champ.
I mean, you know, actually, make your joke. I know what your joke. I know what your joke is. Go ahead.
Well, I think it speaks for itself. But the chances of Cyborg making 145 pounds in 3 weeks, this is just like headed for disaster. I mean, I know they're desperate, but you pick like the least reliable person on your entire roster to make weight in a ridiculously short amount of time. She walks around at like 180 pounds.
Well, I mean, if Michael Brazeris can almost do it.
He missed by six.
Think about that, though. She walks around about the same weight that he was fighting at. She fights 10 pounds lighter.
Right.
And she's a woman. Like, what the hell? What a fucking joke that is. It's kind of weird because, like, in my brain, I'm like, oh, really? They got Cyborg to main event? Actually, she had, like, the second or third biggest draw last year, so... Maybe they all of a sudden they have a really viable pay-per-view. I think it's a little curious that of the two names, everybody's pretty much like, well, she's either going to fight this person or that person. She went with person C behind the closed door. I mean, Megan Anderson, no good. Amanda Nunes, no. We're going to grab chick that has only fought in Kansas City. That's a good proving ground to fight in the UFC. Then again, that's all Megan Anderson has done. But
well. I'm guessing neither one of them – I'm guessing Nunes didn't want the fight on that short notice, and maybe she has the sniffles again. And then Megan Anderson, she's probably doesn't want to try and make weight in 3 weeks either.
I don't know if it's true, and it could just be I misunderstood somebody's Twitter joke, but I swear I saw some reference that she fucked up her visa, and that's part of what she's had this hiccup with, is that – like, maybe she came here on just a tourist visa, didn't get, like, the special work visa and all that stuff. And that's why, which, honestly, when you think about all the stuff, like, how kind of weird it was, mysterious, and it all went away, and it wasn't like she was pregnant, apparently, she didn't have an injury. I'm like, oh, actually, that makes a lot of sense. It's just nobody wants to say, hey, this person, I don't know why they wouldn't say it, but it's kind of embarrassing that you're so incompetent you can't get your visa correct.
Well, Kunitskaya is an odd choice, too. If you remember back, she was in that fight with Tanya Evinger that ended up being overturned when Evinger tried to, like, step on her face and the ref stopped it. And then Evinger got armbar. Then the commission overturned that. They had a rematch. Evinger beat her. And then Evinger went to UFC, moved up weight, dropped the Invicta title to fight Cyborg and got destroyed. Now, Kunitskaya won the Invicta bantamweight title in the meantime. Now is basically going to drop that and go to the UFC and fight Cyborg at a weight class above her again. Basically the exact same thing that Tanya Evinger did.
And then after that, Cyborg will probably fight Nunes, who will go up from 135 to 145. In her last fight, she beat Holm, who went from 135 up to 145. Like, she's got a really weird gimmick. where, like, everybody who's either is or has been a recent champion at 135 pounds goes up in weight and gets the shit kicked out of them. It's like, like this weird, like, end of the, like, battle boss. Like, you've made it this far. Can you do more? Meanwhile, somehow, of all the women who have held the 135-pound title in the past, like, 5 years, Ronda's the only one apparently who's not going to be facing Cyborg. That's pretty incredible.
Well, maybe Ronda's smarter than we all thought.
I've seen who she married. That is not the case.
How dare you? Travis Brown has good tattoos.
Kind of.
So, I don't know.
It's kind of cool that, like...
I was trying to think of a compliment for Travis Brown. That's all I got, okay?
He's tall.
He has a good beard.
I guess, I don't know, he's just tall. That's all he's got going for him.
So then we've got old Frankie Edgar here without an opponent. And Edgar's story is kind of a bummer, too, because he was originally supposed to fight Holloway, got injured, and then Aldo stepped in and fought Holloway, lost. So Edgar's finally going to get this title shot he's been waiting for. And then Holloway gets hurt. So Edgar's sitting around, and there was talking about Cody Garbrandt maybe, and Garbrandt wanted the fight. Garbrandt also challenged TJ Dillashaw to headline UFC 222. Dillashaw balked at that and said he just had a kid.
Bitch.
And he wasn't in training camp, and he waited 2 years to get his title shot, and Garbrandt doesn't even deserve one. So Garbrandt was willing to fight Edgar, which would be moving up in weight for Garbrandt. Garbrandt didn't care and was willing to do it. But they ended up deciding to go with Brian Ortega instead. So the semi-main event to UFC 222 now is going to be Frankie Edgar versus Brian Ortega. Just in a three-round fight. This isn't an interim title fight or anything like that. They've got the title fight on top of Cyborg. So I guess they didn't have to make another interim belt here.
I mean, the moment this news came out, and I told you and everybody I know, I'm like, they're doing Edgar and Ortega for an interim.
Everyone fight. I know.
Twitter. All right, I went on Twitter and said it. But that's you and everyone I know. But,
I called my mom up and told her.
Well, I probably did. I mean, but yeah, no, I really thought for sure they would make an interim title fight, and I still contend that they will because
Cyborg won't.
Yeah, like in about 10 days, Cyborg's going to be like, wait, I have to be 145 pounds? No, I thought we were going to create a new 155-pound title for me. Can't we do that?
Lightweight. That'd be awesome. She could be champ in two divisions with no fighters.
That's right. They could create a 165-pound title. She could just like win like they could just she could be like Ultimo Dragon just walking on the cage with like 15 titles from all these weight classes that she rules over. And the only people she'll ever fight will still be bantamweight. It's a hell they've really got something there.
So I mean, realistically, she could weigh in at 145, 155, 170, and I think like she walks around at like 180, 185. She could actually hold four titles at once with no competitors in any division.
And Ronda wanted her to go down to 135. What the hell? I mean, she's going to be the next 185-pound women's champion. I mean, that's pretty crazy. She's the Anthony Johnson of women.
I'd want to see what she looks like at 185 pounds.
I bet she looks in really good shape. I bet she's in good shape still. I bet you look at her, you'd be like, what the holy shit.
It's weird because I weigh like 185 and I'm in terrible shape.
Yeah, well, you know, she's more of a man than both of us combined. And you have two children.
That's true.
What the hell? But, I still think that she's not going to make it. And just the gods say that Edgar and Ortega for an interim title. It just makes too much sense with the way the UFC books these days. I mean, come on. You're going to have a guy fight for a title on that card. He's a top-level guy. There's another guy who's top-level, and your champion is injured. We know that the moment a champion is injured for even a day, the UFC's like, oh, time for an interim title. Let's go for it. So how this hasn't had an interim title already, that's just Dana's slipping. And don't give me this bullshit like he's turning over a new leaf, because you know that they're going to come up with another interim middleweight champion soon.
It's a bummer that for Edgar, because if he loses this fight, he'll probably never get another title shot again, considering his age and everything. This was, I want to say, his last like title shot, but you can only get so many, and it's not like he's going to get better. If anything, everybody else is catching up to him and passing him. So it's like, if he doesn't beat Ortega here, it's not going to be good.
No, but that's, you know, that's Frankie Edgar, man. He's a warrior. That dude's a real, I mean, he is a real fighter. And he's still not at the proper weight class. He, unlike Cyborg, should be going down in weight.
Right. Who do you like in that fight?
Edgar.
Yeah? You think he'll just keep it standing and kind of light Ortega up?
I think so. I mean, I know Ortega's really good on the ground and all, but even on the ground, I have a feeling Edgar could do really well. Like, he's got that championship-level ability at everything. We don't think about, like, how good he is on the ground because he's so good at everything else. But if he only had his ground game, I bet Edgar would still be top 10 in the UFC. Like, he's going to be just one of those dudes. And he's just so good. And with a few exceptions, maybe a couple moments here and there, I've never really seen him look bad. He's always been in every fight forever. And for that reason, he's one of those. Until he proves me wrong, I'm picking the dude.
That's fair. Anderson Silva was back in the news last week. We found out essentially what he tested positive for back in October of 2017. If you remember back, he was supposed to fight Kelvin Gastelum on that UFC Shanghai card where Bisping stepped in on short notice and got knocked out in a minute after getting knocked out by GSP. So that went well for everyone.
We didn't know that it was steroids. I thought that was confirmed.
Well, he popped, but remember that they say he's been flagged for a violation, but they don't tell you what it was. Essentially, it was a synthetic testosterone called methyl testosterone and an unspecified diuretic. So he
was. Is there any methyl that's good to put in your body?
Methyl.
I'm thinking like menthol cigarettes. That's got the word methyl in it. Meth. That's not good for your body. The methyl is like a kind of alcohol. I don't think that's good for you to drink. So just don't put anything with M-E-T-H or M-Y-T-H. Any M-T-H substances shouldn't go in your body.
But it makes you stronger.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's definitely true. And
what's methyl acetate? I've heard of that.
That might be what I was thinking of with the alcohol part. No, there's methyl alcohol. I know there's ethanol.
There's ethanol. That's corn, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway.
That horse shit.
Weirdest show. Anderson Silva's in trouble. If USADA takes into account his previous failure, which was pre-USADA for you know, the blue vial with the clear liquid, the penis medication he was taking.
I'll never forget.
He could be out 4 years, which would put him at 46 when he could come back, which would presumably be the end of his career, unless they're really desperate for a main event or an interim middleweight champion.
Oh, there is methyl alcohol, also known as methanol. It's the byproduct of the destructive distillation of wood. I think it's like wood grain alcohol.
Oh, yeah. Grain punch.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
So, again, my point still stands, kid. Don't do drugs.
Well, Silva is saying he's never taken steroids in his life.
He'll get 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah, they won't use the prior one against him because it's the UFC, and they're going to look for any excuse they can to give big guys the lesser sentence. Now, if he was to tell a lie, he would get 12 years. But if he just takes the steroids, because the previous steroids was like 3 days before the new rules came into effect, then he gets a pass. But if he lies to them, again, he won't even collect his Social Security. That's how much they'll punish him.
Silva's rep said that the MMA legend would retire if given a suspension of at least 2 years. USADA may still factor in his previous failure and consider Anderson a repeat offender. If that's the case, Silva faces a 4-year suspension with aggravating circumstances, potentially doubling the maximum ban to 8 years. Wouldn't it be amazing if he got 8 years? That would be the best.
Well, he really should be given 8 years retrospectively, I should say, because, you know, if just lying that you said, I ate this meat from Mexico. Now you're a liar. You're banned for life. Hey, I took a dick pill from Thailand, and that's where I had it from. Yeah, we totally believe you. It's good. Come on. They're making this. Fucking Nowitzki goes on Joe Rogan's show for like 2 hours and basically spends half his time talking about, like, John Jones could be not guilty. It's like, wait, what's going on here? This is really weird. These guys they're telling the most obvious lies in the world. I mean, John Jones was so flippant about that shit. He told Joe Rogan, I needed all this guy. He's such a big dick. Like, come on. And you guys are surprised he keeps breaking the rules?
I don't know. I think they're both cheaters. Moving along, Nate Diaz is claiming that Tyrone Woodley fight is my best option for a UFC return. He said, I'm getting to the point where I'm sick of not fighting. I'm not getting any younger. I put that tweet out saying I wanted to fight in May or June, but I didn't say who because I was weighing my options. And now Woodley is my best option.
It's perfect. For like everyone involved, it's perfect.
Okay, tell me more.
I mean, yes, I know the idea of like him and Connor is always a fight, but that'll always be there. And right. If him and Woodley, first of all, that's a big drawing fight. It's perfect for Woodley because it gets him all the attention he'll need. Like if you're not trying to draw money with Nate Diaz, dude, just quit. You're never gonna draw. You're a moron, and nobody likes you. Which might be the case, anyways. For Nate, you know, it's a title fight, so we can't really complain for getting a title fight. And honestly, even if you're Connor, keeping in mind that the fight with Nate will probably always be something, just because your personalities and like Connor's transcended the whole, normal drawing rules. If Nate were to beat Woodley, you do Connor and Nate at 130 pounds, Connor's got a chance to win a third title.
Right.
Like, we actually live in a world where there's actually a chance that Conor McGregor might become the first three-division champion ever, and he will be able to, in some weird way, claim to be three-division champion at the same time. Like, that's kind of weird. And I could definitely see it happening. It's a weird world, man.
The way Conor's career goes, that'll probably happen.
Oh, my gosh. That's definitely going to happen. You know why?
No.
Nate's going to win the title in May. Conor's going to fight him, and we'll say June, July, September. He's going to beat Nate. Then magically, George St. Pierre's going to not have to shit himself anymore. It's going to be GSP and Conor in December.
That'd be good.
I mean, GSP for his title. That's the only fight at welterweight Conor would possibly fight besides Nate. Oh, the stars are aligning, and all of a sudden the UFC will make $100 billion this year, and people will be like, oh, I guess the company's not dead yet.
And we might get Jon Jones back versus Stipe or Cormier for the heavyweight title.
God, I want anything in the world for Zeke Cormier to go up, win the heavyweight championship, Jones gets reinstated and goes up and takes it from him. Like, Jones just ruins his life at all times. And, like, forever people will be like, I guess Cormier kind of won two titles, but did he really? I mean, Jones really was a champion both times.
And then hopefully Jones pops for something afterwards, too.
Oh, yeah. And that could lead, although, if he doesn't, yeah, Jones will beat Cormier for the heavyweight championship at the end of the year, maybe on the same show as GSP and Conor. And then next year, it will happen. Jones will fight Brock. Oh, we're calling shit, man.
Fantasy booking.
Hey, none of this is totally out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, it all hinges on a Nate Diaz tweet.
Well, the fucking country is run by Twitter. Why not the UFC?
As far as Diaz Woodley. The issue with that fight is, talk about a fight where you can't justify it being for a title. Like, Nate Diaz is 3-4 in his last seven. He hasn't had a real win at welterweight since Rory Markham at UFC 111 in 2010. Like, I don't consider, like, the Conor win, like, a real welterweight fight. And there's guys at welterweight who are more deserving of a shot, like Rafael Dos Anjos or Colby Covington or whoever. Kamaru Usman is more deserving of a title shot than Nate Diaz at 170.
Although it does, it's not the worst division for this kind of thing to happen in, because, yeah, there are guys, that, obviously people more deserving because, you know, they've won at that weight in the past half decade.
In the last 8 years, yeah.
On the other hand, it's not like any of them are really like, oh, this guy, like, Dos Anjos is probably your best bet. And even then, it's like, okay, you know, he's had a good year, basically. Right. It's just how a little deal there. But, you know, Colby Covington, again, I don't want to discount these guys, but they're all in the bottom half of the top 10 anyways. Most of them don't have big names, and the public is going crazy for them. And I do think that Nate is close to being that kind of star where people be like, yeah, let's just go with it. And again, in this day and age, as long as a champion is fighting for his own championship, I'm okay with it.
Do you know Colby Covington's ranked third at welterweight right now?
Not in my rankings.
I mean, there's Robbie Lawler. There's other guys that are... make more sense.
No,
but.
And a lot of that's just because so many guys in the top 10 have lost. It's a right. I mean, we're going through the turnover period, and it's very obvious a turnover period at, you know, especially at welterweight there. I mean, you're just definitely seeing old guard going out, new guard coming in, and that's why I have Colby Covington ranked at number four. Actually, and that's number three by UFC standards, so I guess we are the same. Do they have to, I have Dos Anjos, Thompson, and Covington.
Okay.
Is that what they have?
Let me look. It goes Thompson, RDA, Covington, Lawler.
Yeah, that's mine is. I just switched to RDA and Thompson, and then... Yeah, we're going to see Darren Till this year. And
yeah.
I got to really drop... Oh, I got to drop Condit down a lot. He should not be... Condit's ranked, he should not be ranked,
12.
He should not be ranked number 8 in my... anymore.
Okay.
I like you completely lost interest. Like, yeah, okay, let's go.
Well, it's like, I can't see what you're talking about, and it doesn't sound like you've updated your rankings recently anyway, so let's move along. Diaz told ESPN in regards to Conor McGregor, he's just living his life right now, and he's got a magnifying glass on him, whatever he's doing. I don't give a fuck what he does. I'm sure he's up and down. Do I want to be in these lights? Why am I not in these lights? I need to get in the lights. I need to get out of the lights. It's a crazy roller coaster. So essentially he's given up. He's claiming he's given up on fighting Conor because he doesn't know what he's doing and wants Woodley instead.
That's the most Diaz answer there. He's in these lights. Do you want to be in these lights? How do I get in these lights? I got to get out of these lights. Like, all right, Nate, you've really hammered home every possible interaction you could have with a light.
It sounds like a Kanye West song. If I mean,
flashing.
Lights, don't you find that to be a mismatch though? Like, isn't Nate gonna get wrecked by Woodley?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean. Look, because it's a Diaz and their style is always game for the most part, it could work because, you know, Woodley tries too hard sometimes. Like, he wants to go in there and fight and use his skill, whereas, you know, someone like Nate, you should just go in there and Rory McDonald him.
Speaking of Tyron Woodley and black people who try too hard, Brendan Schaub took umbrage with... the announced team on Fox Sports 1. He said, sometimes you look at UFC tonight and you're like, all right, is that the best panel possible? Or are you just trying to check off the boxes? We get it, UFC tonight, Fox. You're not racist. We get it. You have an all-black panel. We get it. Whoa, we get it. We get it, man. And I think he said this on his podcast. There's a video of it. And he went on, I'm going to ask you again. Are those the best brains and speakers for the art to the general audience? Depends. It depends on the night, depends on the panel they have, but typically not. And that was basically a shot at Karen Bryant, Tyron Woodley, and Eve Edwards.
You really shouldn't be, glass houses and stones, my friend, Mr. Shop. Let's not be criticizing people's intelligence when you're admitting that you regularly watch UFC Tonight.
Well, that's the thing that got me. It's like, I'm not a fan of Shab. I find him super irritating, and not super well spoken. Not that I am either, but he just irks me. I don't know if it's his.
He's a dick.
Pretty boy. I'm not familiar with his dick. It's more his personality and his look and his pretty boy thing. And when he says going to Sizzler and all these shitty catchphrases he has that aren't funny, like, I don't begrudge his success. Like, he's popular, people like him. He does stand up shows around the country and they sell out, I guess, but it just doesn't do anything. It's like Jeff Dunham. It just doesn't do anything for me. It's okay if other people like it, but
no,
I just
Jeff
don't get
Dunham
it.
Can do the whole, like, his mouth, his lips don't move thing. That's way more impressive.
Okay,
I mean, like,
you can see
Shab's lips moving the whole time as Callen's got his hand up his ass.
So, in response to this, Eve Edwards said, yo, Brendan Schaub, what's this bullshit you run in your mouth about? And then Brendan Schaub replies to the Thug Jitsu master, meant zero disrespect to you. I spent 30 minutes praising Daniel Cormier and said he's the best in the world besides
this
Rogan.
This says a lot about Brendan Schaub. He thinks Daniel Cormier is good.
Kevin Lee and I were discussing black fighters and entertainment. Bad job on my part. That's on me. I love you guys. Watch all the shows. My bad. I'm sorry.
That's a good way to apologize, actually.
Well, he really backpedaled there.
I mean, that's a real apology for people wanting to go, like, how do you do it for real? That's a kind of like a, yeah, no, my bad, I'm sorry. Like, oops. He's still a racist moron.
Then Edwards wrote back, I appreciate your apology. I wasn't talking about race, but when you say someone isn't good enough to do the job and you don't say who, I want to know if you're talking about me. I wasn't assuming or insinuating you are racist. Don't sweat that.
Yeah,
that's not a thing.
I mean, come on.
It sounded a little...
Come on. I mean, here's the thing. And Eve would be right to do it, too. I mean, come on. We're all really here to go, wait, really? You actually said diversity box. Like, come on. Like, what am I supposed to think? Like, you're referring to the fact that you have a Jew and a Muslim on the panel or something? Like, come on. We know what you're getting at.
I'm going to be totally honest, and I'm not trying to sound self-righteous. Like, sometimes I'll put that on, and I find Karen Bryant annoying, but, I didn't even know they had an all-black panel, and I've seen that show, like a bunch of times, and it's never even, like, crossed my mind that, like, I don't even think of Karen Bryant as black,
I'm,
no offense.
I'm 100% actually with you. When you're saying this, I guess they all are black, but to me, Karen Bryant isn't black or white. She's, like, non-specific, just TV person. Like, you just see, like, 1,000 of her out there. And I guess, obviously the other two are black, but they rotate so many people through on that show. It'd be one thing if, like, they were the only talking heads the UFC has. I'd be like, okay, I can kind of see that. But, Paul Felder's a god, and he's out there. Jimmy Smith just came in. He's awesome. I don't know.
Bisping and Kenny Florian are on that show, like, every weekend.
I wasn't sure
if
Florian was still doing it or if he was just,
plagiarizing.
Just had reruns of him going over and over again. But, again, Bisping's all over the place. Dominic Cruz.
Yeah, Helwani used to be on it until he got fired.
A Jew, they're not really white. I mean,
I get confused. Jewish is a religion, right?
Well,
like, any race could be Jewish.
That's how I would think of it, but I also think that that might be somewhat of a actually, like, a legitimate, like, a Christian perspective on things. I think it's more, I don't say more complex, I think it's more complex than that for a lot of people, because you see a lot of, like, atheist,
I am simple.
Like, atheist Jews, and you go, what? It's because there is a Jewish culture as well, and there's a Jewish identity, whereas, like, there's not really, like, a Catholic culture. I mean, there's kind of, like, okay, people are Catholic, they do certain things, but nobody says, like, oh, he's so Catholic-y. It's like people are like, ah, he's very Jewy. Like, it just kind of, and you know what I'm saying. If I say that somebody's Jewy, you're immediately going, oh, Larry David. Like, that's exactly who you're picturing, and you know what I mean, and I know what you mean, and they know what I mean. So it's a very, it's a complex and old religion, and it's got a lot of contradictions and a lot of sex abuse going on. Nobody talks about it. Plus the Palestine thing. I'm not sure if that's good or bad, but the Jews are in the middle of it.
Larry David's good.
Yeah. Very good. He's Larry David is he's pretty
good analysis.
Pretty good.
People who aren't good at things are CM Punk and Mike Jackson. They're being rumored for a fight at the next UFC pay-per-view in Chicago in June. That's going to be UFC 225.
Is that the guy that Mike Jackson, is that the one that Mickey Gall beat?
Yes.
Okay. That's yes. A better opponent for Punk than Mickey Gall.
Mike Jackson's got, I don't know what he does. I feel like I saw something about he works for some law firm now, but he also still goes to like UFC shows and takes pictures and is pretty active on Twitter. Let me pull up old Mike Jackson here on my
well,
Twitter.
I mean, the Mike Jackson I remember was very active on any kind of social medium that involved children.
His thing, that's a different Michael Jackson. This Mike Jackson, it says Mike Jackson, comma, ESQ, period.
He's an attorney?
And he's got, he is, and he has a check symbol next to his name now with 6,030 followers. He also has a podcast at MikeTheTruth.com. He is an attorney with the Nelson and Murdoch Law Firm. He is also a combat sports photojournalist.
Wait, is this Twitter?
Professional.
That's not,
yes.
Nelson and Murdoch isn't a real law firm. That's Daredevil.
Not.
Yeah.
Is it? Okay. Then he's being silly. He's not really a lawyer.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think he's a liar.
I don't know.
He is not a lawyer.
I didn't know Nelson and Murdoch was a fake thing.
It'd
I learned something
new
today.
There was actually a Nelson and Murdoch law firm out there. It'd be kind of weird if they just happened to have a cage fighter working for them.
Well, I thought it was odd, but I was going with it. I assumed he was honest, but apparently he's
he
a liar.
He may not know what Esquire means, to be honest. Some people don't really get that you're not supposed to use that unless you're an attorney. I think people think it makes them seem like they're fancy.
Yeah.
I should start using that.
Well, anyways, there's apparently discussions are in the early stages. For this big fight in Chicago, Punk's hometown. He's a big draw.
What negotiations are. Hey, Punk, do you want to fight again? Yeah. Hey, Jackson, you're going to fight. Because what else are you going to do? You're going to say no to CM Punk? Like, really? You're holding out for somebody a little easier? What the hell do you want, man? There's no negotiations. It's going to turn them down. I don't think the pay is good enough. The exposure is just too much. I don't think I'm really ready for that kind of publicity right now. I mean, that would just be ridiculous.
Do you think anybody will care about CM Punk fight again?
You do? Yeah, because it's been a long enough time, and novelties tend to have a decent... I don't know if they have a good half-life, but they have a half-life. And so there will be something to this. Even if it's only half the interest from before, that was still a ton of interest. And, you know, if nothing's happening this summer, there will be, for sure. But if America still exists this summer, yeah, people are going to be looking for something to do.
Do you think...
No, I don't have an opinion on if America will exist. That's true.
No. Do you think Punk can help draw a crowd at the United Center? Do you think he makes a difference? Because, I mean, from the wrestling perspective, from WWE, he would always help draw crowds there, and he's from Chicago, and, you know, they were always hot for him there. I think they had that Cena match there. Does he have any pull there? Can he sell a couple extra thousand tickets to wrestling fans in the area?
I think he could. I don't know if it's going to be necessary because, the UFC, mm-hmm. I don't know if they sell out here or not, but they usually do very well at the United Center, and presuming it's any kind of decent pay-per-view, you know, it's Chicago, a big pay-per-view. That should sell out on its own. Punk will probably guarantee that it does. But I hope that and I hope that a lot of his fans do show up. I really want everybody, if you like CM Punk, I really want you to go watch him fight. Please go watch him fight.
How do you like his chances against Michael?
He's going to lose.
He's going to lose.
Yep, he's going to lose. Based on the fact that Jackson is not CM Punk. That's it.
Okay.
Whenever CM Punk fights, you can always tell who's going to win because you just have to figure out which guy is not CM Punk. That guy is going to win the fight.
Okay, so put your money on Michael Jackson, not Esquire. That would be good. It's a little obscure. I know they need to have a rematch from the parking lot, but that's pretty obscure.
It's fucking awesome that Teddy Hart beat the shit out of CM Punk.
Wasn't it outside an IHOP shit?
In my brain, it's always a Steak and Shake. I don't know why, but an IHOP, it's got to be something like that. Something kind of like a Southern feel to it.
Okay.
I don't know what it was about. I just know that I heard people like, CM Punk, because like, I didn't really know who Punk was. They're like, oh, he's a self-righteous guy. And I'm like, I'm glad he got his ass beat.
Dana White was recently on television. This wasn't with UFC. This was on an episode of Pawn Stars on the History Channel.
Were they looking for shit from that house party last week?
Yes. Since he sexually assaulted people at his house.
I was thinking maybe one of those kids stole something and tried to pawn it off, and he's there to get it back.
That would be a good theory, but this appears he was buying things he hadn't previously owned. He was looking for Japanese swords and spent $69,000 on about a half dozen swords from, like, samurai times, like 1600s and shit like that.
I could see spending $70,000 on one sword. Because then you'd be like, hey, look, I got this super expensive sword. But all he really has is, like, half a dozen kind of overpriced swords.
Well, apparently he paid $30,000 flat for a katana from the 1600s that was restored. Then he paid $9,000 for another, and then the rest were whatever.
That's even worse. I mean, why would you buy, like, here's my $30,000 16th or 17th century katana. Here's something for $800. Like, really? You're going to put these next to each other? Like, you don't go out there and buy a Van Gogh and a Thomas Kincaid to put them on the same wall.
White said, I love the whole Japanese samurai tradition and the story. It's a beautiful sword and I couldn't refuse. I'm building this weapons room in my house and what I'm really looking for today is a sword. So apparently he got
that. That's the ultimate rich. And very specifically, white rich guy move is to build a weapons room with Japanese swords in it. Like, nope. Actually, no, that's not true. A black dude could definitely. Black guys really like kung fu and shit. But, like, an Asian guy wouldn't do that. But it's definitely a white guy to do that. Like,
you know, Quentin Tarantino has one of those.
Yeah, next to the rape room, he's got the weapons room.
This is where I spit in your face and choke you. Here's my swords, and here's the rape room. Which one do you want to see first?
Choose the sword room first, and then grab the sword a la Pulp Fiction and go to town on him. I mean, you're so bored, and you have so much money. You're like, well, I'm going to have a room full of weapons. And again, it's every, like, I've known people who, like, were kind of like me, adult men in their mid to late 30s who weren't married didn't have kids, with a lot of disposable income. I've known a couple of them like that. To a man, they all own swords and ninja stars and guns. It's just like, when dudes have enough free income, we just buy things to kill. That's just what we do. If I had enough money right now, I would buy a gun. I don't know why. I would just be like, yeah, I should have a gun. And if I had enough money, I'd buy a sword. I don't know why. I'd just be like, well, yeah, I mean, if anybody ever breaks in the house, kind of want to have a sword. I would think to myself, I could use this. And I would say, you know, hide weapons around. Like, when I was growing up, I they'd hide weapons all over the house. I had little rubber ninja stars everywhere.
Have you seen the video? There's like it was an old like viral video from probably 10 years ago with this like overweight kid in his backyard running around with a sword, like cutting up 2 liter bottles of soda, and the water would go flying everywhere. Yes,
again.
That's how I picture Dana White. I picture Dana White as that kid. Because, granted, if you've got that much money, whatever, you have hobbies, you have collections or something, but there's something kind of like you're trying to compensate for something when you have a bunch of swords in a room and you bring people down to see your swords. It's like a tough guy thing, which always irks me. Like, I get if people have guns, like they want to go shoot, you can practice that. You can't do shit with a sword except cut up 2 liter bottles of
Coke. I think a sword just would be better than a gun, because at least a sword has aesthetic value.
Right, but with the gun you can go shoot and practice and do target or whatever. Like, I get like that can be a sport. There's a sport aspect to it. There's nothing you can
do with
a sword.
Nobody really mounts guns on the wall.
Well, I think you got to keep them locked up in.
I guess maybe like muskets and shit.
Thanks, Obama. Yeah. What the fuck?
Oh, but look at the fat white guy with this doing sword shit and Dana White. They do have something very important in common. And again, I think all of us men in particular have this thing, which is men who are unconstrained by responsibilities do weird shit. Like, this fat white guy clearly doesn't have a girlfriend. He's never going to have a girlfriend. So he doesn't really have any responsibilities in life, so he can devote his time to swords and shit. Dana White...
Dana has a lot of responsibilities. He's running a $4 billion company.
He's got more money than God. So, like, as far as, like, his private life, he's like, even the UFC, he's just doing that for fun. Like, in his private life, with his wife and his kids and everything, like, he has no responsibilities. They're all taken care of. So, you can drive around and be like, I'm going to do anything I want today. Like, you and I can't do that. You can't drive around and be like, I think I'm going to create a weapons room. You have to be like, I think I'm going to invest a little bit more in one of my kids' college funds. I'm going to have to pick one of the two, but I'm going to make sure they have enough money to go to college. Dana doesn't have college funds to pay for anymore, so he buys $30,000 swords.
Right, but I'm thinking I would have a different hobby. Do you know what I mean? Than making a weapons room. Like, just that would be on my rate. Like, I don't know, I would travel or... I don't know.
I think eventually dudes just get to the weapon stage. I don't know what it is, but like, I could just picture every single super rich guy in the world owning something, like not a weapons room, but they all own something needlessly dangerous. Like, speedboats or airplanes, or like Bill Gates is always going to Africa. Like, really rich people do dangerous things.
Okay, fair enough. Moving along, we've got... we're already at this point. MMA history today. Well, not today, this week. 7 years ago this week, what happened?
You got to start giving me the year. 7 years ago? Okay, that's
7 years ago.
I got the year right. We're off to a smash.
First week of February.
First week of February, 2011. Actually, first week of February 2011, I started my first job out of law school. Vegas, there was a UFC, there was something that weekend. Did I celebrate? I'm trying to think. I'm sure I did. Probably a lot of libations. Let's see. Vegas, 2011. Nobody big and modern now. The Brock wouldn't have been in February. February, Super Bowl. That's a Super Bowl show. Super Bowl show, 2011. Who would be my big stars 2011? Come on, baby. You can come to me now. Oh, boy. That's we're like a year. Yeah, we're a year or two out before Ronda would show up in the UFC. I think she was 2012.
I'm gonna interrupt you for a minute. Super Bowl show, right? How the hell is UFC Bellum the Super Bowl
They've
show
given
now?
Up on the Super Bowl.
I know, but that used to be a thing.
Yeah.
You know those shows around the Super Bowl?
Somebody
figured out that...
We're not making money in these pay-per-views on this thing.
They made money on this one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's a big one then. Now I feel a lot of pressure. See, 2011. I'm wondering who the champions are in 2011. I'm trying to think of this. See, Super Bowl 2011. It would be a show probably needlessly big. Uh $725,000. Let's see, 2011. What the fuck was I doing in my life? Oh, yeah, I just said what I was doing in my life. Boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, I just sing a song, hoping to trigger my memory along. I've got no fucking idea.
One of the greatest knockout finishes in UFC history, in the main event.
Oh, Anderson KOs Vitor Belfort.
Correct, with that front kick. That he was taught by Sensei Seagal.
With one of my favorite calls of all time, Joe Rogan at his most honest. Oh my gosh, he front kicked him in the face. I love that. Just like, he said exactly what everybody who'd ever watched MMA forever, who kind of had like a little bit of the traditional martial arts in their background, kind of be like, holy crap, it worked. Wow. And it was always, I remember, I was always like, it was always a joke because, years ago, obviously before even that, Brother Brian was talking to me once, and he got worked by some dumb karate magazine or whatever. He started like they're talking about like the front kick of death, where, like you could hit a man in the right place and you cripple him. And I'm like, I'm sure in theory, in hindsight, they're talking about like, you know, a liver kick or something. But then when Anderson did that, he goes, hit with the front kick of death. I'm like, oh shit, it works.
Rarely. Then you had the Machida one just a few months later against Couture. And it seemed like there was going to be a trend there, and since then you almost never see it. You see guys land it, but you don't see people finish fights with it. But that was Anderson Silva in his prime, man, where he looked pretty much unbeatable. He came off that come from behind Sonnen win, then he beats Okami, Sonnen again, and Stefan Bonner, and then since then, it's obviously been downhill. But if you want to see Anderson Silva in his prime, it's that fight where I don't think Vitor even landed a single shot on him. So a big win for there. Like I said, that show did 725,000 buys. But listen to the rest of this main card. He had Forrest Griffin defeating Rich Franklin, John Jones defeating Ryan Bader, Jake Ellenberger defeating Carlos Eduardo Roca, and the opener was Miguel Torres over Antonio Banuelos. Then on the prelims on Spike, you had Donald Cerrone over Paul Kelly.
Debut, and Chad, second round TKO finish.
And rear naked choke. And Chad Mendes defeated Michihiro Omagawa. Then on the Facebook prelim cards, you had Demetrius Johnson defeating Norifumi Yamamoto. So, like, you've got multiple number one contenders, multiple
Kid Yamamoto's UFC debut. And I remember when it happened, the way that, like, Mighty Mouse beat him, I was just blown away. Because Kid Yamamoto was, you know, one of this amazing fighter from Japan, and I knew he had fallen a little bit, but I kept thinking, like, he'll reinvent himself at a new weight. He'll reinvent himself at a new weight. Like, he's just got to get the right kind of guys. And Mighty Mouse just murdered, just out-wrestled him. I was like, whoa. And I had to, like, go out of my way to find it because fucking Facebook didn't, like, this is how crazy things are. 2011, finding, like, streaming video on Facebook that would, like, be quality wasn't a given.
Yeah.
And nowadays, I can't get that shut off now on my Facebook.
It was 7 years ago. I mean, it's kind of crazy to think, like, I mean, Mendez is kind of still around. He's on the suspension, but Mendez, DJ, Cerrone, you know, Jones, Bader, a lot of those guys are still going strong now. And that was a deep card. And at the time, you probably didn't even think anything of it. But goddamn, that's a good show.
7 years later, like half of those guys have been busted for steroids. And Mighty Mouse is the greatest who's ever lived.
Yeah. It's funny because probably at the time, like, you would have thought Miguel Torres would have gone on and really done well, and DJ, you wouldn't be so sure. And they both went in totally opposite career trajectories.
I mean, on that show, you would have for sure been like, oh, okay, Anderson Silva, and maybe this John Jones guy. We all could see the potential even then. Like, maybe he'll be, like, the greatest ever. But, yeah, Miguel Torres, even though he fallen. Still, you know, it was Miguel Torres, and Mighty Mouse was just underrated even then.
Yeah, and that was the fight Jones beat Bader, and ended up getting a title shot against Shogun after that. That was the basically the beginning of his crazy run in 2011 and 2012, where he was just finishing guys left and right. Like, he destroyed Bader. I remember one spot, I say spot like it's pro wrestling, but where he like did a backwards like leapfrog, yes, over Bader and snuck up behind him. Like, I still remember that vividly. I'm like, I don't think I've ever fucking seen that. And he made it look so easy. And he was like, he was otherworldly then. And just doing different stuff and trying things out, just pulling guard for no reason. Shit like that. Like, John Jones, when he was on the rise, would try some different stuff. Like, I think he's got kind of complacent and plays it safe now. But back then, man, he would do some crazy shit.
You have to think about, like, 2011, 7 years ago. We are seeing John Jones win the world championship, and all these years later, he's probably even better. And, like, he's a better, he might be a better, more, like, unbeatable fighter today than he is then. And he's on way more drugs now. Actually, I don't know if that's true.
I don't know. Not.
Yeah, I mean, back then he had the youthful vigor. He's probably just doing coke all night long, because he was getting in car accidents with chicks even then.
But I don't think he needed dick pills back then.
That's
he was younger.
He just was just pure cocaine back then. Just mainline that shit.
Raging. And then, so that was 7 years ago this week. And then this coming weekend, no Bellator. Bellator's on vacay. I know everybody's disappointed about that. But this weekend we've got UFC 221. This is Romero versus Rockhold in Perth, Australia. At the Perth Arena. It's February 11th, this coming Saturday.
February 11th,
the main event,
Sunday.
We now have. Oh, that's, shit, is it?
It's Sunday, but over there. Saturday, February 10th here. February 11th is my,
okay,
11th is my
thank
birthday.
You.
That's why I know this.
Ah, happy birthday.
Well, 35.
How old are you going to be? Ooh, happy.
Yeah,
to
this
70.
One's feeling really weird. I'm feeling
why?
Too old to be this much of a loser. I got to really get my shit together.
Oh, that's good, and maybe it'll be motivational.
Well, I'll just drink more.
Yeah, probably just stick with stat quo. Yeah. In the main event, we've got Yoel Romero versus Luke Rockhold. Last time I checked, this was for an interim middleweight championship.
Oh, yeah, you know it is. They might throw an interim light heavyweight in there
okay.
for shits and giggles.
When Yoel doesn't
make
weight.
Yeah, why not just say, hey, we're the first time ever a man's going to win two titles in one night.
It was originally supposed to be Robert Whittaker versus Luke Rockhold, but Whittaker pulled out because he got a staph infection that started eating
his
internal organs.
I
saw him do an interview about it. He was having some colon issues as well. He had a lot of internal
going on
problems.
With spiders in their buttholes lately, huh?
It must be a new training regimen or something. You think that's a Danaher technique?
Talk about taking the back. He'll sink the hooks in deep. Butt sex.
How do you feel about Yoel Romero and Luke Rockhold for the interim middleweight championship?
As a fight, it's amazing. Like,
it's fucking awesome.
These are, you know, two of the big four that used to exist, and they're going at each other. Well, you know, they had these two, Weidman and Jacare. These four.
Right,
you know,
I remember.
Guys are just like, I want to see every combination these guys go, and this is one of those elite combinations, sure. This highest level of athletes and talent and all this. Great fight, amazing fight. It feels like insulting for it to be a pay-per-view main event, but that's, I guess, the reality of the world now. It'd be an awesome semi-main event on a week show. Instead, it's going to be the for fucking interim title, and there is the winner of this fight will be the fourth UFC middleweight champion in a year. And only one of them has lost a fight. There's something really weird about that.
It's been more than that, hasn't it?
Because Whittaker won the title, his title, last July. So he won a title. At that time, Bisping was champion, so he's a champion. Then GSP won the title, and this will be the fourth guy. in about 9 months, four guys will be called UFC middleweight champion, and only one of them, Bisping, actually lost anything, ever. That just is
right.
It's amazing. The only things better than this is probably the UFC women's featherweight lineage. That's better for sure. They've still yet to find a single second person for the division. God, I could talk about that all day long. But, I mean, this fight would be amazing. Should be great, entertaining, highest level athleticism. I just feel like it may not have the right atmosphere because I can't help but feeling like, really? I mean, at least if the real title was on the line, I'd be like, hey, this is the best in the world is going to win this title. Instead, it's like, well, I finally just accepted Robert Whittaker as being good, and now you're giving me another fake title.
The question for me always is, when's Romero going to get old? He's 40 now, and, you know, he's a freak. He's clearly
never
a freak.
Done steroids.
I don't know if he's...
According to Ben Askren, never done steroids.
Ben Askren says Romero's never done steroids?
Yeah, he's on Rogan's show when he's...
How does he know that?
His reasoning was something along the lines of, Cuba's too poor. It was like...
Oh, yeah, I heard him talking about... He was saying that about Thailand,
these steroids are too expensive. I'm like, I don't think he knows how any of this stuff works at all. Like...
He's probably thinking, like, the HGH that Tom Brady's
even then,
on.
Since what morons don't realize that, you know, the one thing that communist countries have always found money for is steroids. It's like the one constant. They all use steroids every time. The Russians are still doing it, and, oh, I can't wait for that shit show to begin. They reinstated all those fuckers.
Who do you like in that fight? Romero, Rockhold. Me too.
Well-rounded guys against Romero who are super great over five rounds. I think that they almost all end up beating him.
I feel like Romero gets taken down more than he should.
He does. He's got that Dan Henderson thing.
You think Rockhold's even? Yeah. You think Rockhold will attempt that?
He's the kind of fighter that would do that, and people would be like, wow, we never really saw it coming. He's really trying things. And in reality, he's just a very good fighter, and if there's a guy out there in the UFC that could fairly say, I train with better wrestlers or just as good wrestlers, it's Rockhold. And between Cormier and Velasquez and Khabib, you know, he's got some outstanding wrestling training partners there. So
yeah.
His wrestling is going to probably be really on point. And I can see, Romero does get taken down. It's weird. It doesn't really matter because he doesn't stay down. But I think he might on this one. I think Rockhold's just a more solid fighter than Romero's used to. And I think that solidity, which isn't a word at all, but that solidity gives him problems.
Sounds like salinity. Then in the semi-main event, we've got Mark Hunt versus Curtis
on the side Blades. Note, I turned on 205 Live on WWE Network because I have something on in the background. And I see these two fucking Mexican dudes. A dude just did a shooting star press, and the other guy just rolled out of the ring. And it wasn't even like a near fall. I'm like, what the fuck am I watching?
Like a shooting star press into the ring?
Like a regular one, like to finish a guy. And it wasn't a finish. I'm like, why would you do that? I remember watching that. That move was so dangerous for years. Like, Billy Kidman almost killed himself over and over again trying that. Brock almost killed himself in the main event of WrestleMania.
Yeah. Did you ever see the video of Brock landing those? Like, they're like, what the hell? Like, I don't understand Brock Lesnar. He's
one of the greatest physical freaks of any sport ever.
Right, and it's funny because I don't think he gets the credit for it either because, like, he got punched in the face a lot in the UFC and lost fights, so people don't think he's that good, but that dude's amazing.
I mean, if Brock could have ever been in his prime and healthy, I don't think he would have ever lost a fight.
He's crazy. He's
I've always just loved watching Brock do anything. Even now, like, I saw him the other day in WWE, like, I think it was the Rumble or whatever – Like, he just got tossed. Oh, no, we talked about this. When he got tossed off outside of the ring, and he just flopped around like he's 150 pounds. I'm just like, dude, you're like a 40-year-old, 300-pound dude. What the hell?
I even like watching him shoot those prairie dogs with that huge
everything
machine.
Everything he does looks like how you're supposed to do something in life. He's like the most manly man there is. And he ended up married to Sable, and they're still married and have kids. Who saw Sable living in the middle of nowhere Minnesota coming?
Not me.
Definitely not Mark Merrill.
Mark Hunt.
Look at Mark Merrill. You have to look at it every day and be like, yeah, no, I totally understand. Like, I totally get why she's with him and not with me. There's no comparison. Look at him.
Yeah. Doing a little Richard gimmick isn't always probably the best way
not
to attract
an
women.
That Richard Little or whatever.
Richard Little. Yeah. Dick Little.
Don't read his name.
What do you think about Mark Hunt and Curtis Blades?
Let's see. Old Mr. Curtis Razor Blades from Chicago against a man whose brain doesn't work.
Blades is only 26. And he has won his last, well, technically he's won his last four fights. One got overturned because he tested positive for weed. Seems to be popular in Illinois. And then you've got Hunt, who has brain damage, coming off a win against our favorite fighter, Derek Lewis. And he still apparently has a couple lawsuits out against the UFC as well.
He still has lawsuits against them. It's just so perfect. He's still suing the company. He's suing the company while he still fights for them, then claims brain damage, and then they get his brain checked out to clear him to fight. Like, they've done a hell of a job bifurcating this whole thing. Like, he's clearly suing somebody over on the left hand, and the right hand's doing its thing, and I don't know how that works, but more credit to him. I'm going to pick Curtis Blades to win by knockout.
Hunt really?
Old, and that's my reasoning. That's it. He's just old. And I think something weird's going to happen.
Mark Hunt is doing some media in Australia because he's from New Zealand, which is neighboring to Australia, in case you're
Southeast
unaware.
Southeast of Australia, and, in fact. As maybe
definitely
maybe
east.
Oh, wait,
definitely
northeast.
East.
Sorry, northeast. There's some other. There's an.
I would just go with the east.
There was some
safer.
Other thing in the southeast I was looking at the other day. I don't know.
That Tasmania?
No, that's in Australia proper. I don't know.
Tasmania is its own island.
Maybe it was Tasmania. I don't know.
It's south. South. Tasmania is weird. They've got
devils.
Like, yeah. So Hunt is going on the record and saying he doesn't regret calling Dana White a bald cocksucker.
I love Australia, by the way. They are my favorite country in the world now.
You're a turncoat, and you don't stand for your beliefs.
Right. New Zealand is southeast.
Is it really south?
It's a little. It's definitely in the southeast coast, off the southeast coast of Australia.
Okay.
Yeah. It's kind of parallel to Tasmania.
And do you still think Tasmania is connected to Australia? Do you see the water separating them?
I don't know if that's anything there, but look, Australia is a continent. Tweeted at me during the Super Bowl, so I'm a big fan of Australia now. I have had a continent tweet at me. A landmass acknowledged my existence.
Yes.
I'm pretty proud of that. I mean,
that's good.
If I'm going to get Asia, I'm coming for you motherfuckers. Africa, about 20 years when you guys get the internet, I'll be there.
It's just funny because a couple months back you mocked me for wanting to go to Australia.
Apparently I changed my mind.
There's nothing there. It's just desert. The people have a funny accent. What are you going to go look at the opera
apparently
house?
I just changed my mind based on absolutely nothing all the time. I am a gigantic hypocrite, a flip-flopper.
Okay.
I have no integrity whatsoever. I got tweeted at by Wendy's also. I went out and got Wendy's next day. And
that's actually brilliant. Brilliant play by Wendy's.
It wasn't very good.
They had an awesome, what do you expect for $4 for $4?
But I don't like the square hamburger gimmick. I don't get that at all. Like, what?
Okay.
They pride themselves on square hamburgers. Like, the buns are still circular. I'm just getting, like, an extra flap of meat in my mouth. I don't want that.
That's a lie.
Don't. You're better than that, all right? You're better than that.
We also have another heavyweight fight with Ty Tuivasa versus Cyril Asker. Ty Tuivasa is the first Aborigine to ever win a fight in the UFC. He won with a flying knee on the last show in Australia, if you remember.
I can't picture any Aboriginal fighter. It just, it feels like they're all just really sickly, poor, and thin.
This guy is maybe poor, but not those other things you mentioned.
Whatever. I don't know these fuckers.
You're going to like Ty Tuivasa when you pay for this.
I am not going to pay for this.
Saturday or Sunday. Depends on how intoxicated you are. You may.
I know I'm going for dinner for my birthday, too. They open up this new restaurant.
Is Walmart like going into the restaurant business or something?
No, there's a Subway at the Walmart by me. It's a good Subway. I like it. They serve food that I like.
Good.
I want to find this. I told everybody. Oh yeah, the place is called Mission Barbecue. I guess it's a chain of some sort, but all the walls are dedicated with like first responder shit and military stuff, and every day at noon they play the national anthem and people have to stand. I can't wait to eat in a restaurant where you have to stand for the national anthem. What the fuck is that? This sounds amazing. That's the only restaurant I guarantee you can say nigger and not worry if you're going to get in trouble.
Huh. I'm looking at it now. There's one in Downers Grove, Illinois, that just opened. Also in Tennessee. So weird.
Yeah, I know, but look at it. I mean, they have a giant, they have like a Humvee out in front of the restaurant and everything.
No, I'm looking. There's, this reminds me, what's it, do you have Firehouse Subs out there? Like, they donate like a dollar or like 1 cent from every dollar to like local fire stations or something. Like, I want to say it's the same gimmick, but it made me think of that.
I've heard of it. I think I've seen it. I'm sure I haven't eaten at it.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Mission Barbecue opened its doors for business on September 11th, 2011.
Awesome. This just got even, they're really working better.
They're working the gimmick. 10 years after our world changed forever, in some small way, we wanted to change it back. As the founders of Mission Barbecue, we strive every day to remind everyone what makes our country great. It's heroes. Who are we? Two friends passionate about barbecue, patriotic for our country, and who believe in running a business with meaning and purpose. We believe there's nothing more American than barbecue, and nobody more American than the brave men and women who have sworn to protect and serve our communities and our country. We do what we do for the love of our soldiers, firefighters, police officers, first responders, all our loved ones in service. We set across this great land from Texas to Kansas City, the Carolinas to St. Louis to discover the secrets of great barbecue. Every day we strive to serve you authentic barbecue made from the freshest, most delectable ingredients and serve it to you in a patriotic dining room filled with tributes to those who've made our country great, given to us by the people who earn them. Stop by at lunchtime and you might catch us during our daily salute to the Stars and Stripes. We don't do any of this because we have to. We do it because we want to. At Mission Barbecue, we are proudly serving those who serve. Come help us complete our mission.
I'm just looking at their menu. There's no way I'm going here. I'm not a big fan of ribs at all.
What do you think they were going to have at a barbecue place?
A hamburger or something? And they don't have it. They don't have a hamburger. I think all they serve is ribs.
I would go there just to see.
I know,
this place.
But like I don't think I like ribs really.
Is it the
bone?
Like,
I haven't actually eaten ribs in like 1,000 years. It could just be that I don't like barbecue sauce.
There's different kinds. There's like dry barbecue. There's like different styles.
Yeah, like,
Barbecue is kind of cool because basically what you're doing is you're taking like a tough, shitty cut of meat and you're cooking it slowly and kind of breaking down some of that muscle and fibrous shit and making it tender and taste good. But there's other, you can get pork ribs. There's beef ribs. Beef ribs usually
I
suck.
Think that's I'm not a big pork fan. I don't like pork. It goes against my religion. Assalamu alaikum.
It's really cheap, too.
Yeah, pigs are a cheap animal.
I'm familiar with the prices of pork, but I'm just saying, like the sandwiches and stuff, it's inexpensive, this place. Like, you don't see a lot of places with a $6 sandwich anymore, unless I'm just on the highfalutin East Coast.
I mean, I get two little kind of pre-made mini sandwiches from Target for $5.
I'm talking about a sit-down restaurant where they have, like, China and a server who brings you the food. You don't usually see sandwiches for $6 anymore.
That's true. It seems like they're all $10.
Yeah.
I've been so indoctrinated. I just think that's normal. I've been getting ripped off and not even appreciating it.
That you're not getting ripped off. Trust me, nobody working in that restaurant with the $10 sandwiches is making any money. Like, I love people who say that. Like, that place, the portions are small and it's such a ripoff. I'm like, trust me, whoever's running that place is not getting rich off you spending $15 on your dinner.
Anthony
Bourdain's
rich.
It's like, this place is a gold mine. It's like, no. Show me all the millionaire restaurant people you know. People work in restaurants. Like, Emeril's on TV. He wasn't a millionaire before that. Gordon Ramsay's rich. It's because he's on Fox three nights a week.
There's a lot of celebrity chefs these days. I don't know how that became a thing, but people love watching other people make food. But I kind of want to watch like a cupcake making show right now. I also kind of want a cupcake.
So does Misha Tate.
She's got good thing.
Yeah,
she's
that
one in the
looks
oven.
Interesting. Yes, cupcake in the oven. I would check that place out just because
it doesn't sound amazingly over the top.
That place would not make it in Cambridge, I can tell you that much.
Probably a pretty safe assumption there, yeah. Next thing you're going to tell me in Berkeley, it wouldn't fly either.
Oh, my God. Fuck your corporate
Meanwhile,
ribs.
Some atheist vegan pay what you want for your food restaurant may not really make it there in Des Moines.
Hey, what I do have to say, though, to that place's credit, they've got multiple stores open, and obviously they're doing something right and attracting a crowd. So I respect them for that. I find it odd. I wouldn't rush in there to eat myself, but good for them. They found a niche,
like,
and it's
gimmicky.
Working.
Like, the older I get, I like gimmicky restaurants with shit on the wall. Like, I'm sitting there eating, like, I like to see little things, and I know it's all, like, fake, but, like, oh, look at that. Somebody wrote, John was here. I wonder who John was. I wonder if I can write my name. Like, I'm the target dumbass consumer for everything. It's just incredible. Although, now that I'm turning 35, I'm moving out of the demographic where people care about me.
Did anyone ever really care about you?
Dogs.
I think they would just go to any human who happened to give them food.
Well, I'm seeing this disgusting beached whale laying here right now, and I can't really disagree.
My dog's tumor is getting really large. We also have Jake Matthews versus Li Jinglang, and Tyson Pedro versus Saperbek Safarov is the opener of the main card on.
Dude, you got to make sure you get over here early. You want to watch Saperbek Safarov and Taijing Ling fight, man. You don't want to miss those.
Guys, come quick.
I mean, I don't even know if I would. Honest to goodness, if this show was for free on Fox Sports 1, I would not tune in to like the main event. Semi-main. I'd watch the semi-main event also. No, I don't have a prediction for Taijing Ling.
No, it's Li Jinglang.
Ching Chong Ping
Pong. Son of a bitch.
Racist, I rub you wrong time.
I bet I could beat you at ping pong.
That's a really weird assertion, but probably, I guess. I would say you can just based on the fact that you think you could. Anybody who thinks there's that confident ping pong must have some reason behind it. Normal people don't just walk around and be like, yeah, I think I could beat you in ping pong.
And, like, if you were a hyper-competitive person, that'd be one thing. But, like, just out of the blue, when somebody like you is like, I can beat you ping pong, you'd be like, well, that motherfucker knows something that I don't know, so sure.
Any fights on the undercard you're looking forward to?
No.
There's a guy named Israel fighting. I know you like names like that.
I am a fan of names like that, mostly because it's just easier to spell.
Rob Wilkinson versus Israel Adesanya.
I'm just going to make a bunch of Jew jokes, I'm sure, during the coverage here. I guess Jose Formiga fights versus Ben Nguyen. That's not bad. Ross Pearson, Mizutu Hirota. Actually, some of that earlier stuff there isn't horrible, necessarily, but, I mean, they're just grabbing. They essentially grabbed two good guys from the real world, and then every person from that part of the world. Like, hey, Chinese guy, Korean guy, Australian guy, guy who lives in Sioux Falls, but, like, has some sort of weird connection to Australia somehow, Tasmanian dude, and then, oh, you're Brazilian shit, you can come over anyways. But seriously, look at this, like, Hunt is Aussie. Tai Tuvesa sounds like he's probably from that fucking part of the world. Li Jing. Li Jingling from that part of the world, kind of. It's still like a 7-hour flight to get to China from there. Safarov, Russian sounding shit from that part of the world. Dong Hyun Kim, that side of the world. Rob Wilkinson might be a dude from that side of the world for all I know. Sounds like he could be. Alexander Volkanovsky. No. Volkanovsky. Definitely from that part of the world. Ben Nguyen, that part of the world. Mizuto Hirota, that part of the world. Teruto Ishihara, that part of the world. And Daichi Abe, that part of the world. It's just a local show that they're expecting me to pay $65 for. And if I drink too early in the afternoon, I might do it.
Guess where Israel Adesanya is from?
Africa.
Yeah.
Nigeria. Adesanya gave it away.
Really? See, I wouldn't even know that.
I'm worldly, so I know these
but,
things.
But it's weird. He was born in Nigeria, but his nationality is New Zealander.
Oh, he's got a double whammy there, isn't he?
I guess so. Did you ever see that movie where the kid got, like, kidnapped or something from India, and he ended up in New Zealand? Like, his parent, like...
No,
yeah, did you
my
see
brother
that?
Did. He said that like half of it. He said half of good it was one. Really, really good, and then it kind of got boring.
I liked it. It was good. It was depressing, uh-huh. But it was good.
My life's depressing, so I'm not going to watch depressing.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say your life was depressing and good, and I was going to say, you know, one out of two. You mentioned it earlier. Russia and the Olympics is still an ongoing story. Apparently, the doping ban has been overturned for 28 Russian athletes. Did you hear about this?
Oh, yeah.
Would you like to hear more about it? The Swiss-based Court of Arbitration for Sport,
CAS,
upheld the appeals. Yes. CAS upheld the appeals of athletes given lifetime Olympic bans for doping violations during the 2014 Sochi Winter Games, saying there was insufficient evidence to show they had broken the rules. The ruling means that athletes' 2014 results are reinstated, and they could now seek to participate in the Winter Games in Pyeongchang, which opened on February 9th.
There's literally a documentary full of evidence. There's holes in the wall. They weren't sophisticated. They have the guy that ran the whole thing saying, this is how I cheated. What evidence do they possibly need?
In a further 11 cases, CAS ruled that doping violations had been committed, but that lifetime bans were not justified, and the punishments were cut to a ban for the 2018 games alone, which is basically a lifetime ban in Olympic sports because these people will be old by the 2022 games. The IOC said the decision may have a serious impact on the future fight against doping. Among the reinstated athletes were cross-country skiing gold medalist Alexander Legkov, men's skeleton gold medalist Alexander Tretiakov, and women's skeleton world champion Elena Nikitina.
Always good to cheat at riding a sled.
11 bans were upheld.
I like that. Crazy. I love when they pull that. She's like, 28. Yeah, you 28. Nothing for you guys, but you 11. Like, definitely something on you. The documentary mentioned you by name, I guess. This is such a joke. All this stuff is a joke.
Well, the other thing,
see, like, the IOC and WADA have there are people who are on both boards. It's insane.
Well, the other thing that's ridiculous is that they reinstated these people a week before the Olympics.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point? Unless they knew all along and they've been fucking training like crazy and Russia's going to put them in. But you presume Russia already had, like, qualifying and did all that shit. Granted, they cheat and don't give a fuck and they'll do whatever they want. But even so, like, how could these people be in any condition to compete in the Olympics on a week's note, literally less than a week's note?
I don't know. Cyborg can make weight in 3 weeks. These people can probably make the Olympics in one. I mean, look this way.
Probably.
If you were to ask me what's more likely, somebody can get an Olympic athlete shaped to ride a sled in a week, or Cyborg can lose 50 pounds in three, I'm going to go with the sledding dude.
The Kremlin has said it is very happy with the decision.
Well, the Kremlin is... wait, hold on. Nope, according to my phone, the Kremlin, I understand, is a very good organization.
They seem legit.
I mean, I know that everybody cheats, but the Russians are, they just have such a blatant history about it. Now that East Germany doesn't exist, Russia's the only, like, major dopers out there. And you know what, everybody is pretty sure that in 2008... at the Chinese in Beijing, that the Chinese are doing the same thing. And I know people, everybody cheats. I don't think that the Americans cheat. I would say the Americans, the French, the rest of Europe doesn't really count. They don't win anything. But, like, Americans, yeah, we cheat, no doubt. But I think there's a big difference between the institutional cheating that they go through and what we do. Like, I really don't, you know, I don't want to be naive and say we don't do it at an institutional level like they do. But then I think, look at all the people that looked the other way at a guy raping children so they could get gold medals in gymnastics. Like, if they're willing to look the other way on that, why wouldn't they orchestrate a gigantic cheating scheme? Like, if you're going to, like, let a guy finger bang 12-year-olds, surely you're going to be okay with fudging a test result.
Yeah. Yeah, I still don't understand that Larry Nassar story. I mean, what the hell? And it's weird, too, because you wonder what, like finally they got him and someone spoke up, but that went on. Like, hundreds of girls were violated by that guy, and it just kept going on and on. It's like, it's just a shame that, and I'm not like victim blaming or anything, but it's a shame that, you know, one of the first dozen people didn't speak up, and that many people had to suffer through that guy.
I don't
you know
exactly how old, like, the oldest victim is now, but my general impression is that a lot of these cases have happened within, I'll say, like, the past 10 years or so. And no, we're not in, like, the Me Too era, but that's well post-Catholic Church scandal, and that's well past Joe Paterno and all the boys at Penn State scandal. Like, this is a thing people are aware of. Like, you don't get in trouble when this happens. It's like, oh, you report it. You know it's going to come out. I just, to say nothing of the fact that he's molesting little kids. Like, what the fuck? To even say those words out loud kind of makes my skin crawl a little. Just like the phrasing of that. It's like, ew. Like, if I actually knew somebody was doing that, I don't want to be like the internet tough guy or anything like that, but you really would think, wouldn't your first thought be, all right, let's go cripple him? Like, really, like, if I knew, like, my next-door neighbor was doing that or something, like, my first thought would be, how can I hurt him?
Right.
Now, maybe I would tell myself, don't do it. I would exercise control and restraint. I am a grown man who's not subject to his whims of fancy, or whatever the fuck I'm trying to say. But I sure as shit would not go from, all right, I shouldn't kill him, to, how can I make sure he keeps his job and puts him around more children in the future? Like, what the fuck? And all this so that you can run an organization that wins some gold medals for doing flips. Yay.
Yeah, it's horseshit. It's fucking ridiculous.
MMA and stuff, everybody. We take a hard stand against child molestation.
Humans do fucked up shit to each other. I don't know. We're the best species and the worst species at the same time, right?
No, dogs are
dogs can't build nukes.
Hence why dogs are way better. They just walk around, sniff things, bark a little bit, and sleep.
Yeah, but they also eat their own turds.
They're eco-friendly.
Did you see the Philadelphia?
Oh.
Did you see the Philadelphia Eagles fan eat the horse shit on the
ground? I saw
that
there was a video clip of it or whatever. I didn't click it on purpose. Yeah. I'm like, nope, that's it. We've reached the limit of the internet for me. I'm out of here.
Eagles fans are an interesting lot. All the time towards the end of the show, I'll just put Twitter on, pull it up on my phone and see if there's any news. And the top thing that comes up on my phone right now is Richard Pryor's widow claims he hooked up with Marlon Brando. Jennifer Lee Pryor told TMZ her late husband had a sexual relationship with Marlon Brando after Quincy Jones mentioned it in an interview with Vulture.
I know Brando is bisexual. He was outwardly bisexual. Like, he even talked about it. He didn't. Because Brando was one of those dudes, like, he truly didn't give a fuck. Like, he's just like, I'm doing my life. This is what I do. It's just, that's what it was. Like, when the whole, like, he had people put the cue cards up for him to read things. He wouldn't read it in advance. He wouldn't prepare his lines. He was just a lazy man. And just like, nah, fuck you. I can act. I know I can act.
I guess Quincy Jones did an interview and he said, Brando used to go cha-cha dancing with us. He could dance his ass off. He was the most charming motherfucker you ever met. He'd fuck anything. Anything. He'd fuck a mailbox. James Baldwin, Richard Pryor, Marvin Gaye.
Yeah. Pryor did grow up in a legitimate crack house, so it's not like he's got all of his faculties about him. Yeah, it's kind of the weird tale of Hollywood.
The Pryor's wife says, it was the 70s. Drugs were still good, especially Quaaludes. If you did enough cocaine, you'd fuck a radiator and send it flowers in the morning.
And people are surprised that Bill Cosby acted the way he did. Like, think about what you just heard, and then you realize, like, by comparison, Bill Cosby is a Boy Scout. Like, really. Like, it's incredible. That was just a really, really horrible time. Like, yeah, the sexual revolution was really great, I guess, for a lot of women and gays or whatever, but, like, they had a lot of women entering the world of, like, crazy sex with men, and men are just men, and we don't need to be taught anything. And I think all these women showed up, and they're like, whoa, wait a second. You guys are telling me that you will happily give us a lot of drugs and fuck us while we're asleep? We didn't think that was a thing. And the guy's just like, well, yeah, I mean, it just seems like it would make it easier. I don't know why I wouldn't. I've got the drugs, and I'm not going to use all of them. And you're not using your body when you're asleep, and you're a woman, so I don't really respect you. So, yeah, why not? Let's go for it.
Yeah, I mean, the issue's always consent, you know? They're both people.
Oh, really. Yeah, but back then, consent just meant, was the man able to get an erection? I can't remember who it was. I think it was either Brando or Laurence Olivier, but they were talking to, there was like some actor, and the guy was like, oh, I gotta get into character, I wanna do this and that, like I gotta feel this and blah blah blah. And I'll say it was like Laurence Olivier looked at him and just be like, what? No. You just go out there and you act. And that was it. And I was just like, there's like these dudes who are just like, yep, that's how this business is. You don't overthink it. You don't have to get deep in there and just like, nah, you just go out there, you just pretend for a little bit. That's all we're doing here, guys. And they were so naturally charismatic and goddamn handsome that we went along with it.
billionaire Elon Musk's Falcon Heavy rocket launched successfully, yesterday. I'm not exactly sure why this is so important. I like watching the videos of his stuff explode. That's not because I hate on Elon Musk or anything. I just think it's funny when people spend millions of dollars on things and then they
explode. I like to see people that try get their comeuppance. I'm not going to lie.
But this one apparently went well. This is apparently the most powerful rocket ever. It lifted clear of its pad without incident. It soared high over the Atlantic Ocean. And then I guess like two of the three pieces landed successfully, so they came back down and landed. So this is like a reusable rocket, which has never really existed, I guess. I guess they go into outer space and they can't come back or land or whatever. Once they're out there, they're out there. So this is the first. And he also put up a I think it was a Tesla and a mannequin, and that's out there orbiting around space now. Kind of a weird thing to do, but a lot of people seem to like it. And maybe I'm just out of the loop and haven't studied my rocketry enough.
Snake oil salesman. Like, seriously, he shot his goddamn car up in outer space just to have it go around. Like, look, dude, when you're telling me, like, you want to build, like, your Hyperloop and this and that, and you're going to go to Mars, I'm like, hey, he's this visionary. And then it's like, what did he do lately? He threw his car in outer space. Like, okay. And a mannequin. Yeah, all right. By the way, this is also, this would be another piece of evidence for why I'm not too worried about, like, North Korea, because they're still trying to figure out how to get a rocket to go, like, 500 miles in the direction that they wanted to go. Meanwhile, we just got some dude, just a random civilian, building reusable rockets. Like we are creating recyclable spaceships. Are we that good at this now that we're just like, we can just redo it? Yeah, why not? Like, holy cow. What a time to be alive. Recyclable rocket ships. That have $200,000 cars that run on the sun or something.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
I can't buy weed legally Illinois. I mean, come on.
The long-term goal is to, like, send people into orbit, like regular civilians up, and you fly around Earth and I don't know what the hell you do. Then you come back and you land down here. I think this is the beginning steps to make that happen. And again, I don't know all the information and stuff you need to do that, but I guess he's going to try and launch bigger satellites for U.S. Intelligence and military. Large batches of satellites, such as those for Mr. Musk's proposed constellation of thousands of spacecraft to deliver broadband across the globe, bigger, more capable robots to go to the surface of Mars, and huge telescopes are all the goal of these rockets to bring them up to outer space, I guess.
I think it's a little kind of odd that if he's building satellites for like the CIA and people, like, why isn't the government building our super duper secret spy satellite? It feels like
there's not enough money. There's not enough money for the federal government.
I guess not. But Elon Musk just talked his way into some more Google money or something. I don't know. Look, if he's probably a snake oil salesman, so this doesn't matter. But if he's legit, they're going to totally kill him. There's no way they're going to let him just give free broadband across the country like that. It's just not going to happen. Excuse me. This motherfucker wants to give us cars that don't need gas and free internet. You really think that one's going to go down well? Oh, yeah. Like the oil companies and Comcast. Oh, yeah. Those are two giant groups that just aren't vindictive and petty. Why don't you just cure cancer while you're at it? Go for the trifecta of organizations that will kill you for fucking with their money.
Anyway, the Falcon Heavy launched successfully. In other billionaire news, did you hear about the billionaire who's refusing to pay taxes because of goose poop on his lawn?
Oh, this ought to be somebody really annoying.
three-time gubernatorial candidate and former Buffalo Sabres owner Tom Golisano is so fed up with Canadian geese turning the lawn of his upstate summer home into their own personal bathroom that he is refusing to pay $90,000 in local taxes. This past summer, it was horrible. We drive in and out and find 100 to 200 geese parked on our lawn, said Golisano, 76.
Said a grown man whose lawn is so big that 200 geese could fit on it.
Golisano, 76, who is married to former tennis ace Monica Seles, 44. You can't walk barefoot, can't play frisbee, can't have your grandchildren run around. Here I am paying all this money in taxes and I can't use my property because of the geese droppings. The businessman says he has tried to use fishing line, repellent, and a wolf decoy to keep the birds from pooping on the lawn of his summer home on Canandaigua Lake in South Bristol, but to no avail. The tycoon said he plans on withholding the tax payment until officials in the Finger Lakes town get a handle on the pooping wild geese.
Look, if there's some sort of like ordinance that prevents him from getting rid of the geese, that's one thing. If he's just not going to pay his taxes because Mother Nature's a bitch, sorry, pal, that's not really how it works.
I don't understand why that's the town's
fault. That's what I'm saying. Like
the town can't control where geese go. It's a wild animal.
That's what I'm saying. If there's an ordinance that doesn't allow him to kill them or something, and like he could do that, then I'd be like, okay. But again, if he's just mad that the geese like the shit a lot, well, I go back to my original point of you have a summer home that could fit 200 pooping geese on it. That's a pretty big summer home. Also, you're 76. How much frisbee are you playing?
Town supervisor Daniel Marshall called the move bird-brained. It's a resident's problem to take care of, not the town's. He noted that no other lakeside residents have lodged complaints about the geese. It is a lake, after all, Marshall said.
I now support the billionaire because this asshole said bird-brained.
I think that was something the New York Post.
Okay, that would be something they would do, yeah. My allegiance on local politics sways depending upon the particularities of each individual's character.
Golisano's net worth is $3.4 billion, according to Forbes. He has said he made Florida's permanent residence to avoid New York's high taxes. He married Monica Seles after the pair became engaged in 2014. Former New York City Mayor David Dinkins was said to have officiated their wedding.
He just saw her and felt this stabbing pang of love for her.
You know the Monica Seles story?
That's
she
what
was
I just
like,
gave
a
reference
the
to
number one.
When I said he saw her and had a stabbing pain of love.
I do, but like she was like 15 or 16 the best tennis player in the world. Like crazy.
The John Jones of women's tennis.
Kinda. She kind of eclipsed like Steffi Graf back in the day. And then she got stabbed and she was never really the same.
After stabbing.
Although, sometimes they
do like a 30 for 30 on her or something? Because I feel like I watched something recent, like in the past year on her. And they talked about how, like, the stabbing obviously didn't help, but that a lot of it was she didn't get necessarily, like, they're using her as an example of not exposing, like, that some, oh, I know what it was. Because they, after her, they put into restrictions on what age you can be to play, like, senior tournaments and tennis and all that.
I think they did change it a little bit.
They were like, she's just too young for this kind of pressure and all that. And I think the people are kind of complaining, like, that comes from a good place, but we do have kids out there who are just way too good for their divisions right now, and they would benefit a lot by playing against the adults. But the counter to that was the last time they did that, the girl got stabbed. So it's kind of a trade-off.
Yeah, I think that was just a crazy guy, though. I don't think it mattered on her age. Like, there's been Jennifer Capriati never got stabbed. Like, I mean,
yeah,
there's a lot of young players who never got stabbed. What? Speaking of men, in Illinois, there's a Holocaust denier running for Congress, and he'll probably get the nomination for the Republican Party. This guy is interesting. His name is Arthur Jones. He's an outspoken Holocaust denier, activist, anti-Semite, and white supremacist.
Like that somebody could be like their Chiron or whatever, like on TV, where it's like Mike Coughlin, attorney, Matt Grady, restaurateur, this guy, anti-Semite. And like he'd be like, that's what his business
and Republican candidate.
Like, that's
for
what
Congress.
His business card says. Like, white supremacist, Holocaust denier, and anti-Semite. He's like, yep, that's who I am. That's what I go for. Go by. I'm not like that other guy who doesn't deny the Holocaust. I know the truth.
Well, it's always funny, like what the first word you would use to describe yourself is. Is it like man? Is it white? Is it straight? You know what I mean? Like those obvious identifiers. But usually, you don't say like.
As you say,
not a racist.
Or in his case, not a Jew.
What's the second way to describe yourself, sir?
Not being fooled by the Jews. Not being controlled by the Jews. You get like 13 down the list before he finally stops talking about the Jews.
And then he's like husband.
Band teacher. Polka player.
It looks like he's going to get the nomination because nobody else is running in this congressional district for the Republicans, which I can't believe they couldn't scrounge anybody up in this whole county in Illinois.
No, that county, it's Lipinski's county, relative of the great Dr. Keith Lipinski himself, in fact. His uncle.
Okay.
His uncle, I think now it's his cousin. His uncle held the seat for a long time. Now Dan Lipinski is the congressman there. It's a district. It's like 75% or 80% Democrat, but he's a very like conservative Democrat. Like he's pro-life and like he stands by it, kind of pro-life. And he's got a reputation of being very moderate. So it'd be basically impossible for a Republican to ever do anything there. And like I can see the party just being like, "Well, we're not going to spend our money, and nobody's going to bother ever trying to run." I'm sure, you know, there's seats like that all over the place where just nobody runs.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I just feel like Congress. It's a different story. Like even around here, there's always a couple like Republican primaries for I think every Congress seat. But anyway, some of his quotes are good in the Chicago Sun-Times here. But let me just read you the first two paragraphs here. Arthur Jones, an outspoken Holocaust denier, activist, anti-Semite.
I like that he's outspoken about it. He's not one of these Holocaust deniers that's just kind of like ho-hum and
Well, you know,
the guys are just like, if you ask him, like, oh, yeah, no, actually, I deny the Holocaust. All right, you want to go to Sizzler?
Right. He'd be like, let's go to Sizzler and talk about how the Holocaust
happened. Exactly. Then he'd show up, they'd be like, you know who didn't get sizzled?
Everyone loves a good Holocaust joke. So he's poised to become the Republican nominee for an Illinois congressional seat representing parts of Chicago and nearby suburbs. And the first quote is, well, first of all, I'm running for Congress, not the Chancellor of Germany, all right? To me, the Holocaust is what I said it is. It's an international extortion racket. That's the first quote from him in this article.
What are you going to do? I'm going to cut your taxes. What are you going to do? I'm going to protect women's reproductive rights. What are you going to do? Stop the international conspiracy by the Jews? I'm really upset about the way the Jews are controlling things from their safe and peaceful country of Israel.
Given the fact that I've got no opposition in the primary, okay, I win that one by default, all
like
right?
That one, as if, like, the other one is still in play. Like, I'm going to take care of that one real easy, then I'm going on to the general. Anything can happen in an election.
Tim Schneider, the chairman of the Illinois Republican Party, really took a strong stance in this statement. He says, the Illinois Republican Party in our country have no place for Nazis like Arthur Jones, who strongly opposes racist views in his candidacy for any public office, including the 3rd Congressional District.
This is awesome. This whole story makes me so happy. And I'm rooting
Jones
for the guy, too.
Jones told the Sun Times he is the former leader of the American Nazi Party and now heads a group called the America First Committee. Membership in this organization is open to any white American citizen of European or non-Jewish descent.
I like how they call it a committee as if I'm supposed to believe that it's not just him.
Membership is one person, yeah, one member.
It's him and Roy Moore. And Roy Moore's Jewish lawyer that didn't vote for him.
Lonnie Nassiter of the Anti-Defamation League says, Arthur Jones, who proudly displays Holocaust denial, xenophobia, and racism on his blog and website, has a long history of hateful extremists and anti-Semitic views. For example, in 2009, he protested the opening of the Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center and continues to espouse absurd conspiracy theories questioning the deaths of millions of Jews. He has spoken publicly at numerous neo-Nazi rallies and events expressing xenophobic policies based in racial and religious hatred. He is, by every definition, an anti-Semite and unrepentant bigot.
I always love quotes like that, when somebody describes somebody and they're doing it in a way that is, you know, we're all reading this going, wow, what a horrible person. But the guy who's being described hears that and goes, yeah, you got my bio right. Like, there's none of that. He would not deny any of that. Like, if you called me an anti-Semite, I'd be like, I'm not an anti-Semite. Like, I'd be like, that's a bit of an insult. You call him an anti-Semite, you'd be like, okay, yeah. And my last name's also Jones. What's your point?
So I think Jones tried to run in 2016, but was removed from the ballot.
He tried to run before, and they were able to get it kicked off because they claimed that the signatures on his petitions were a little hinky or whatever, which they all
weird.
Everybody's signatures, everybody forges those things. Like, not like they don't like forge it, but there's always gonna be something a little weird on there. And look, if this dude showed up in one of my signatures, I'd put it on that fucking thing for sure. I mean, I'll sign anybody's thing, though. Not really a good example.
By 2018, Jones took his petitions door-to-door himself and took greater care to have valid signatures. Can you imagine him showing up at your door? Be like, oh, yeah, I'm running for Congress. You know, I'm a Republican. I want to lower your taxes and be a little more conservative than Lipinski. Could you sign this so I can get on the ballot?
Also, I want to gas the Jews.
Then you sign for him. That you sign for him, and you see, like, 2 days later, fucking guy was at my door. He said he wanted to lower my taxes, but he really wants to kill all the Jews.
That is kind of curious. Like, how far into the conversation do you get before, like, the Jew bomb comes out? Because it sounds to me like this guy always has Jews on the brain. I don't think that he's going to be like, I want to cut, do you think we should have lower taxes? I do. Why do you think we should have lower taxes? Because the fucking Jews are collecting them all. Like, it's just kind of like, what do you think about, should we go to war with Iran? No. Oh, me neither. I don't believe in war. I do. I just don't want to help the Jews. Like, it's a weird position there. But again, I'm rooting for the guy. I'm really, really pulling for him. Because
why?
What really turned it for me, setting aside the fact I love any absurd character entering the world of politics because it's such a self-right, they're just so full of themselves. Like, every once in a while, let some nut job go for it. Like, he's not going to win. We all know he's not going to win, so who really cares?
Right.
No, but what really got me rooting for him was when I found out that they kicked him off the ballot before, and his response was, all right, I'll fix it. And he comes back like, it's like a weird reverse version of like Scooby-Doo or something. Like, I would have got away with it, but what for those pesky GOP chairmen wanting to keep the Nazis out of office? And so he's like, all right, comes back with it. It's like he's trying to one up the crotchety old dean. Oh, I'll pull my prank on him yet. I'll get on that ballot. They can't stop me now. And he's got to get a bunch of votes just because, you know, nobody's going to know who the fuck he is, and somebody's going to look at the name and be like, I don't know. I'll go vote that guy. He'd probably get a couple hundred votes on accident.
Well, yeah, just people who automatically vote Republicans down the thing. I bet you he'll get more than a couple hundred votes.
Just to say I voted for a Nazi. It's like half the reason I might vote for Trump.
It's not every day you get the
chance. I might vote for Trump in 2020.
Mm. So these stories always catch my eye because I've got school age kids. The headline and the New York Post, these are all teacher related headlines, but I'm going to read one in particular, then give you the other headlines that they have under the category teachers. This one says teacher accused of biting 4-year-old student's finger. Authorities in North Carolina are investigating a parent's report of a teacher biting her 4-year-old daughter. Dominique Davis tells the Winston-Salem Journal she contacted Middle Fork Elementary School staff after noticing dried blood on her daughter's hand January 24th. She says school officials said her daughter injured herself on a paper towel dispenser, but her daughter later said a teacher in her pre-K special needs class had bitten her finger. Davis says a human bite caused an infection and another finger was broken.
A teacher bit a retarded child's finger?
Forsyth County Chief Deputy Brad Stanley said Tuesday the Sheriff's Office and Child Protective Services are investigating the allegations.
It's so much worse because it's a retard. Like, if it was a regular kid, some part of it would be like, I don't know, maybe you snapped, or the kid was being a jerk, or whatever. It's like, you work with retards. You can't bite a retard's finger. Maybe they bite yours.
I don't think you can bite anyone's finger, any kid's finger, no matter what
they're
doing.
No, but a retard feels like extra bad.
Why? Because, like, you think no one will believe them or something?
They're retarded. They've already got enough shit in their life that's bad. You have to add on the fact that they go to school and then their teacher bites them?
And breaks their other finger. One broken finger and one finger with bite marks and blood on it. How hard do you have to bite another human's finger to make it bleed?
I have no idea. You have to tell me, because this is a child's finger. I don't know. Maybe they snap real quick. I don't know.
They are smaller.
I don't know.
But,
I don't know the tensile strength of a child's pinky, for instance. I mean,
fair enough.
Also, you, as a father, you would you'd have a lot more insight than I would. Especially, like, it's one thing, like, when, like, a kid was to come home and be like, Dad, the gym teacher touched me funny. You'd be like, well, my kid wouldn't lie about this. Like, it's, you know, you would never lie about this. So you'd take it seriously. But I feel like I would absolutely have lied. Be like, my teacher bit me. Like, I feel like it's exactly like an excuse I would have come up with. Been like, what happened to your finger? Instead of being like, I was fucking around after school, I'd be like, teacher bit me.
It seems kind of far-fetched, but I think it depends on the kids and the age of the kids and what your relationship with your kids are. Like, my kids are still young and relatively honest. Like, they'll say some dumb stuff, and then you look at them, and they'll smirk, and we all know what's going on here. We know who spilled the milk on the floor. But they don't go out and out and intentionally lie to us yet. You know what I mean? They're not doing stuff. They're not old enough to be doing stuff that they're trying to hide from us, you know? That's a weird one. But my other favorite part, like, with the New York Post, their website, this is under the category teachers, right? And then there's like five other headlines you can click on where it says more on teachers. And I just want to read you these headlines. Teacher fired for using fake Facebook profiles to spy on parents.
How do you get caught on that one?
A teacher is quoted as saying it's unconstitutional to prohibit sex with students.
Of course, yeah. There we go.
Another headline says, teacher allegedly groped teen, asked him to send nudes, yep. And ex-principal gets prison for upskirt videos.
Yeah,
there
was 3 out of 4 or something like that. Like, I mean, I just, if I ever have a daughter, I send her to a Catholic school, which I would probably do if I could afford it. If she has the option between wearing pants and wearing a skirt, I'm never going to let her wear a skirt. Ever. Ever. You have to be insane to let a daughter wear a skirt. Do you know how boys are? And now your teachers are doing it? And here's the thing. You hear, a teacher made an upskirt video or whatever, high school. You're not really surprised. You're like, yeah, I guess, that, you know, principals are kind of weird.
Shouldn't we be teaching the boys not to behave that way as opposed to...
Yeah, we should. But,
okay.
You could teach the dog not to bite you, and you should tell the dog don't bite. But if you stick your hand in the dog's mouth, don't be surprised if it bites.
I don't think that's a fair comparison.
I think you've forgotten just how insane teenage boys can be. I mean, teenage boys are not much better than hyenas.
I'm just saying you're victim blaming.
No, they're still victims. They don't deserve it or anything like that. But, you know, I mean, just because you should always have the right to walk through a park. You should have the right to walk through a park at 2 in the morning. But if you walk through a park at 2 in the morning, you just should know you're more likely to get accosted by a bum than if you do it in the middle of the day. No, the bum doesn't have a right to do it, but be aware of your surroundings. Unfortunately, I'm saying to women, be aware of your surroundings, and your surroundings are school. So my thing doesn't totally work there. Yeah.
Okay. And that's our teacher stories for the week. This one also caught my eye. The New York Post has a lot of goodies this week. This is in Bradenton, Florida. Authorities say a grenade launcher loaded with a live grenade was left with other donated items at a Florida Goodwill store. Employees at the Goodwill store near Tampa reported the weapon on Sunday. The Manatee County Sheriff's Office says the store manager told deputies that the grenade launcher had come in a shipment from another store several days earlier. The employees at the other location said they sent it along because they didn't know what it was. Deputies say they disposed of the active grenade in a hazmat locker, and the launcher was stored in the agency's property room. It's not clear who donated
the item.
Every
one of those fucking cops or whatever that was involved in this was, like, drawing straws, but they were all like, who gets to blow it up? Who gets to blow up the grenade? Like, you just know all those SWAT guys are just like, holy shit. We have an excuse to use the grenade launching facility we were given with that 9/11 money that we used to say, oh yeah, we really need to upgrade to military style equipment here in Bradenton, Florida. Very dangerous hub.
I could really get lost on the New York Post
What's
website.
Weird about
for
that
hours,
story reminds
like.
Me of another story that I think you sent me about old Shelton Benjamin.
That was what I was going to get to next. But before we do that, New York Post has more on weapons. Apparently the story falls under the weapons category. I'm going to give you the four
teachers,
headlines from that as
weapons,
well.
Weapons. These are the main category of stories for the New York Post.
Apparently, I guess there's all different categories. So this
local
one was
news,
under weapons.
National
but they also
news,
have
teachers, weapons. And weapons is for white men to get ideas for their weapon room.
Enraged driver accused of slashing man with a machete. Man busted with bullets, guns, and weed at Holland Tunnel. Instagram slammed after company promotes knives disguised as
beauty
products. Wait,
that one story was man caught at Holland Tunnel with weed, guns, and bullets. Okay.
Yes.
He could just have literally been carrying a handgun and a joint. I mean, weed, guns, and bullets. Like, well, if you have a gun, of course you're going to have bullets with you. What's the point of having a gun if there aren't any bullets? What's the point of having a gun if you don't have some weed to go along with it? You're going to be stressed out from your gun.
A Brooklyn man was busted at the Holland Tunnel with a box of hollow point bullets, two air guns, and handcuffs in his car. Shalom Amron, 24, was driving...
A Jew with guns and weed.
Was trying
get
to drive
the old, Quincy Jones from Illinois or whatever the fuck his name was on the case. We got an example for him of how the Jews are running things.
I don't know what this means. He was trying to drive his 2012 Black Authorities out of New Jersey on Sunday around 4 p.m. when he stopped at the toll plaza because he didn't have enough money to pay. Cops who approached him smelled marijuana on him and detained him. In his car, they found the ammo, a felony crime, along with an air pistol, air rifle, pair of handcuffs, and under 50 grams of marijuana. Port Authority Police spokesman Joe Pintangelo said Amron, who has no prior bus, was arrested and released on his own recognizance.
They arrested him for having a couple of joints and a BB gun.
I think it was the hollow point bullets that were the problem. That's a felony. I guess you're not supposed to have those.
Are they really a danger if you're using them with a BB gun?
I don't know.
I don't know either. There's a gun store down the street I've mentioned. I should go check it out and ask them.
That's always a good question. Is it really a big deal if I have hollow point bullets in my car?
Also, I like to smoke a lot of weed. I mean...
Is there a problem with these? Are these maybe irreconcilable, or can we make them work?
I heard it can be an issue in Brooklyn. Is it in Chicago Ridge? And the last one under weapons is umbrella mistaken for weapon causes hospital lockdown. So.
And meanwhile, a British nanny was seen fleeing the scene.
And lastly, we have WWE Superstar.
Makes the medicine go down.
I'm not a big fan of,
musicals?
What is that? No, I do not like musicals. No. Oh, they're the worst. Like, can you just not sing and just act and be normal? Like, no one runs around singing like that. Like, there's nothing more pretentious than a musical.
I like singing
but
the songs.
Theater is not my thing at all. I'd rather just watch a movie in my house than some second-rate actors on a stage with a bunch of strangers and pay like $100 to go see that shit.
You're talking to a guy whose brother saw Hamilton on Super Bowl Sunday.
Hey, I'm not judging what other people do. I don't care. I'm saying for me, it's nothing I'm interested in. That's all. If you're happy doing that, by all means. But
you don't like Mary Poppins.
Holy shit. I do not like the kids. My wife likes Mary Poppins. I'm just not into musicals. Even like the Disney movies where they sing, it immediately makes my eyes roll. Just like get on with the movie. Like the movie was fine without this dumbass singing. People don't just start singing.
First of all, I've sung several times in this show, so that's a lie. Also, I don't know if I've ever actually seen Mary Poppins, and I agree with you. Most of those Disney musical things, I think growing up, my attitude was kind of like, this is really lame. I want to watch something with violence in it.
WWE superstar Shelton Benjamin was shocked to find a loaded gun in his budget rental car 4 days after renting it in Little Rock. Benjamin posted the picture on Twitter Wednesday and said, "Budget put his reputation, freedom, and quite possibly my life in jeopardy."
Yeah.
"I've unknowingly been driving your car around the last 4 days with a effing loaded gun in the glove compartment," Benjamin tweeted. And on his Twitter, he wrote, "Thank you, Budget, @Budget, for your great service of putting my reputation, freedom, and quite possibly my life in jeopardy, yada, yada, yada." So I don't know if Budget's responded to this,
responded.
But I think Randy Orton did. What do you say? That's
something
fucking
like
crazy.
That, yeah. I love Randy Orton on Twitter because he's like, it's clearly him and he just trolls people in like in a very Randy Orton manner. I just love it. Like, of course Randy Orton's like, "What the fuck, dude? It's such a Randy Orton thing."
Yeah, the quote is, "Holy fuck, dude."
Like, it exactly sounds like just like any of us would be like, "Holy fuck, dude." Like, I like it. Also, it's good to see that O.J. Simpson's renting cars again. Like that.
It would have been better if it wasn't Budget. I don't think. Who was it? Avis or Hertz or something?
Hertz.
Yeah, it would have been so awesome if it was Budget that he was doing those ads for. That would have been so perfect.
I mean, how does that happen? I guess, first of all, who rents a car and leaves their gun in the glove compartment? Like, presumably you bring your gun with you into the rental car. Like, it doesn't come with the car. It's not part of the package. I don't think you're upgrading. Like, you know, for another $10 a day, you can get the luxury sedan, and for another $20, you get the full arsenal of weapons of your choice. You get to go down to the weapons room that Jim's been building there. Him and Dana have been going over it. You can pick out anything you want and just put it in your car, and then you just leave it there. Like, I guess if you did leave it there, I don't know. I know. First of all, I don't know how you lose a gun. Like, it's a gun. I know if I don't have my cell phone on me, I'm aware of it within about 3 seconds. So I don't know how you'd be like, 2 hours later, like, "I don't know where the fuck I put that gun." And I retrace my steps, dude. I have no idea. No clue. Okay, I feel like if I left the gun in the car, you would go back for it. Because your name is not in the rental car. Like, they're going to be able to trace this one back to you. Because presumably, many people rented this car.
And you should be able to be like, so you rented this car? Yeah. Did you, do you own a gun? No. Okay, next guy. You rented the car? Yeah. Do you own a gun? No, never held a gun in my life. And then you get to the guy right before Shelton Benjamin, you'd be like, look, we talked to everyone else. None of them own guns. It's not his. So could it maybe be your gun? Just think. Just go back in your head a little bit. Just trace your... Did you get some takeout? Maybe it was in the takeout. Did you buy a map? I don't know. I don't even know why we have glove compartments anymore. And when you say the name of the thing out loud, it's dumb. Nobody's keeping gloves in there. It's just extra shit in my car compartment, but I use the console for that. I guess if you rent a car, you put your loaded gun in there. And how fucked up would that have been if he... Because he could have easily been killed. A gigantic, like, 6'4", 200-plus-pound black dude who's all ripped and jacked, and he's telling you, it's not my gun. I don't know who's got it. I don't know. Is there any weapons in the car? No. And then they see the gun, like, you're lying, but no, really? I didn't do it. And then he's looking around, and next thing you know, there's a cop from Baltimore running away going, hey, we got another one.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what you say. Oh, could you get the registration out of the glove box? You open it up, fucking gun falls out and discharges in the car with a cop right there. Yeah, that's not a good look. I mean, I don't know how that happens either. Because the question is, like, you leave the gun in there, and you're like, oh, shit, I left the gun in there. But you already returned the car. Do you go back for it or hope a few more people rent it in the meantime? Like, how do you go back? Because you know somebody's going to go back with you to the car and keep an eye on you. They're not just going to let you go back to the car the next day. Or maybe you forget about it for a few days, and you're like, holy shit, it's too late, and nobody's noticed or said anything.
I would just go back at night.
And what, break into the car?
The alternative is I leave my loaded gun in the car.
So what do? You smash the window at the budget rent. You jump the fence, probably a chain link fence, break the window, break the glove box to get in the glove box. If it's locked, it's probably not locked, but the alarm's going to go off, and then you're going to run away with a loaded gun.
Yeah, I'm not going to leave my loaded gun in the car and just be like, maybe no one will find it. Who looks in the glove compartment?
Well, could you say? You can't say it was the person before you. Well, it's not mine. Well,
unless it's an illegal, unregistered gun. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Guns and cars are very easy to track ownership of. Like, both of those have pretty good paper trails behind them. Still would have been...
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been tragic, but it would have been a little funny if Shelton had died from this. Like, I'm not really sure how the hands up, don't shoot works when... It's your own car with the gun, but it's like the old Dave Chappelle skit, you know, like sprinkle a little crack on him. It's like, just leave a loaded gun in the glove compartment, and you know he's a wrestler, so you know he's traveling with all kinds of drugs on him.
What? I'm trying to think of the what's that bit with the guy who sings. Where he goes crazy on Chappelle's show.
Charlie Murphy?
No, Prince? No. No. I'm never going to think of it. I can't think of the guy's name. He was on...
Rick James.
Whose Line Is It Anyway? No. He hosts like...
Wayne Brady?
Wayne Brady, yes. It's Wayne Brady, bitch. It's one of my favorite skits from
Brady
that show.
Wayne Brady going to have to choke a bitch? God,
that's
damn,
right.
The Chappelle
Thank
show
you.
Was great.
Only two seasons. And lastly, we'll finish with a story. I was hoping you could help me with this since you know a lot about the law. Charges have been dropped against a woman who scared carriage horses. Prosecutors in South Carolina have dropped charges against a woman who had been accused of dressing up as a dinosaur and scaring two carriage horses in Charleston. Local media reported that Charleston City prosecutors on Wednesday dropped charges of disorderly conduct and wearing a mask on a public street against Nicole Wells of Charleston. Wells had been arrested after someone wearing a Tyrannosaurus Rex outfit stepped in front of a carriage hauling 16 sightseers last May and growled. The carriage operator fell out of the carriage when the horses backed up and the wheels broke the right man's foot.
Everyone knows the horses are afraid of dinosaurs.
None of the passengers were hurt. Prosecutors did not explain their decision to drop the charges. Palmetto Carriage Works general manager Tommy Doyle says the company is considering a lawsuit against Wells.
I'm guessing it's one of those big inflatable T-Rex things that people are wearing everywhere. Kind of a really dumb prank to pull. Like, the last thing... I don't ever think it's a good idea to jump in front of, like, a dozen gigantic animals and then scare the shit out of them. It feels like that's going to backfire on you.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly backed up right over that guy's foot.
Yeah, I mean, all you need is one horse big, hey, it goes forward. Next thing you know, like, the story becomes, and in local news today, a troubled individual in a dinosaur costume wandered in front of a herd of stampeding horses.
But why would they drop the charges? Like, there's not enough evidence that it was her?
Probably the person's
like,
probably crazy.
What she was charged with, she was charged with disorderly conduct and wearing a mask in public. Like, those seem like pretty straightforward charges that she was guilty of.
It's probably, I mean, there's probably more to it. The prosecutor may just be going, this isn't worth my time. I don't want to go to jury. Look, let's just be grateful that the prosecutor is doing the right thing and not wasting our time by taking this to trial and trying to, like, what? Somebody needs to have, like, go to jail over this. This should be settled in a civil manner. And it sounds like it will be. They'll sue her. She'll owe the dude some money for his broken foot. Otherwise, like, a lot of those crimes, like wearing a mask in public and shit, they only exist as a pretext to hold criminals, usually. It's like, you know, it's like when you see, like, the charged with 12 counts of murder and one count of breaking and entering. You're like, well, what's the point? It's like, well, because, right. You know, like, one of the recent terrorists that we had, one of the number of them, I think the New York guy, yeah, the one in New York where they didn't kill him somehow, and every black guy's like, really? The fucking guy's got a gun, you didn't kill him, really? Like, they immediately charged him with, like, some really minor thing, and they didn't initially charge him with, like, you know, murder. And people are like, what the fuck? It's like, because you charge the thing that you 100% know you could always get, no matter what. That way you have an excuse to go forward with everything else. But when, you know, again, usually they're sitting thinking, well, you know, he's wearing a ski mask, and he also robbed a liquor store and raped somebody. Well, this time, they were just wearing a mask, and they scared a horse. Like, kind of a hard sell, I feel like, to a jury. But, like, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, we have laws in society. They are here to protect us, to keep us safe from danger. And that person violated the law when they dressed up like a Tyrannosaurus Rex and scared a horse. We were all in grave danger that day. And then somebody just be like, hey, it's a prank or whatever.
Right.
Anyways, that's how, a little known fact, that's how dinosaurs went extinct. They got trampled by horses to death.
The mammals did take over. Dinosaurs didn't exist.
It's just a plot by the Jews.
Anything else going on? Alrighty, on that note, we're going to close out the show here on halfguarded.com. So is the MMA and stuff. Check out the website, halfguarded.com. Again, halfguarded on Twitter. There's an Instagram. There's all sorts of stuff out there. Thank you for listening, and we will – ooh, I might not be here next week. I got to work Wednesday night because it's Valentine's Day. Talk to you later. Bye.
Get up, cocksuckers. It's all over. Listen, we had a rough couple of months. Fucking Katrina's cousin Maria, the other one, Puerto Rico, Houston, fucking Florida. Listen, it's been tough up to now. The earthquake in Mexico, you know, the White House, whoever the fuck is going on. But it don't matter. They want to shoot, it's time for us to fucking shoot, cocksuckers. They want to get down and dirty, don't forget who the fuck we are. You understand me? We're the baddest motherfuckers out there. You send a message to that fucking North Korean. He's gonna be sniffing my dick and sucking my asshole. That's the focus. We're going to North Korea in like a year. It's gonna be an island. It's gonna glow in the dark. You know why? Because we're Americans, cocksuckers. Who the fuck do you think you're dealing with? Stop with the gun control. They're selling more guns than ever the last 3 days. Stop with the fucking whining. Stop with the Russians on Facebook. I don't give a fuck. Worry about yourself. Keep your eyes open. And get the fuck off Snapchat and fucking Twitter, cocksucker. Stay black.